The Bills wrap up the first week of OTAs today. John Murphy and Steve Tasker here to recap week one of the action.
The owners made some rule changes down in their spring meetings. We're going to talk to Boston Globe reporter Ben Volen, who's there, get his reaction and find out from him what's going on with the Patriots this offseason.
Lorenzo Alexander joins us at 1:30. We'll talk to some of the players as they come right off the field. Plus, we'll hear from you. One Bills Live starts right now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Good afternoon. Welcome to beautiful Orchard Park, New York. Welcome to One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, brought to you by Kaleida Health. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio here in OP. The Bills players not in newer field today. They're out on the grass practice field, the brand new grass practice field adjacent to the Ad Pro Sports Training Center. That's where we are. Let me start off by apologizing to our loyal listeners and viewers. We're 8 seconds late to start today's show today, and it's because of our producer, Jay Harris, who apparently producing the hockey show lost track of the time, which is really number one in the job description, right, of a producer.
It's outrageous.
Outrageous. 8 seconds. Where are we going to make up those 8 seconds? Steve, you're going to have to talk a little bit quicker today.
I guess. We got to squeeze it. Now we're going to have to shoehorn the show into 3 hours.
I had some really good points I was going to make, and now without those 8 seconds, I'm not going to be able to make them. Just kidding, Jay. We love you. Jay's doing double duty today. He just said, I love you, too. That's enough of that.
Yeah.
Jay's doing double duty today, doing the hockey show and the football show, and we're here with kind of a busy show coming up.
Kind of cool. We had the Sean McDermott press conference today at like 10:30, so we're all in there huddled around, you know, watching that. And it's cool because they give us these cute little rosters on front and back with have the whole team on by broken down by position. So it's a little, you know, kind of a 3x8 card, and it's always nice to get that because it's always it'll be outdated in 10 minutes.
That's all right. It's good to have.
It's nice to have it. You get it. It's not a depth chart. It's just by position. So when you go out there to practice, which by the way, practice today was open to the media, and plus they had a lot of corporate guests, a lot of people from
Kaleida
were out there. I mean, there's like 200 people out there.
Yeah,
and it was fun. I mean, because they were going through punt team and all that, and you know they were struggling to keep the ball out of the end zone, I noticed. But
Not impressed, Steve.
It was fun, though. It's always fun when they start playing football and doing some stuff like that because we've been talking about it all week. This week, it got ratcheted up a little bit, and it's been fun to see. It feels and looks and kind of smells like football out there. It's a lot of fun to finally get it rolling.
There's a couple hundred Kaleida people here, including the CEO, Jody LeMayo, and a couple of my friends, Mike Hughes and Mary Lou Klee, and tons of employees. And I said to each one of them, I wonder if you got this vibe too. Because of the sun, because of the, what was it, 73, 75 degree temperature?
Smoking hot out there. It's great.
I said, this looks and feels like training camp, didn't it?
Yeah.
I felt like we were back in training camp.
Absolutely. Because there's always crowds at training camp, and there's always, it's open to the media, but people might not realize this. It's also, you know, a lot of employees come out.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of Bills people come out and get a chance to see practice for the first time, and they kind of, the club says, all right, you guys can, you know, take 20 minutes and go out there, or go out and watch practice if you have the time in your day. So a lot of Bills employees kind of structure their day around being able to go out there and watch practice too. So it's a little bit of an event.
Yeah.
It's not just a football practice, and it's kind of you can feel it, you know. It's kind of different.
I moved a bunch of my Kaleida friends over to watch the offense. I say, well, when you leave here, you're going to tell people where you were today, and you're going to tell them you're at Bills practice, and what do you think they're going to ask you? How's Josh Allen? I said, so come on over here.
Don't look over there.
Don't look at this punt team. That's not for you. Look at the quarterbacks because you want to be able to answer that question. How does Josh Allen look, right? And they did. They moved just like I told them to. Great to have the Kaleida folks here. They're here for a couple of hours more today. Great to have you in the audience with us. We think we have a pretty decent show here today. Programming note, this is our final show of the week. And we're off next Monday, too, for Memorial Day. And I know, Steve, you agree with me. In case we forget Tuesday, we do want to take a chance to, first of all, acknowledge that we love having those days off, love having Memorial Day off, but we do recognize the incredible sacrifice made by those who are honored on Memorial Day. It's not, yes, there'll be, I asked one of our interns, what are you doing this weekend? And he said, oh, hot dogs and beer. And I get that. But it is important to acknowledge what Memorial Day Monday is all about, and it is about that sacrifice made by so many. So, right?
Absolutely.
You can't just walk around this weekend and say, hey, get a weekend off. You got to think about that.
I was one of those guys that my era, my generation, I was kind of a little kid really little kid, too young to understand at the end of Vietnam, at the end of Vietnam conflict, and I was too young to get into the – I was playing football in the pros when the Middle East thing, when the Desert Storm came up. So it was, I was kind of in between all of that, but my father served. My father-in-law served, and I've got sons of good friends who were in the service, and you can never overstate what it means to all of us and how much we appreciate it. And I'm glad at least 1 week in the year everybody stops and takes a minute to remember it. It's great.
And we will too, and we are happy to have tomorrow off and Monday off, and we'll be back with the show on Tuesday. You're coming back, right? You like the four-day weeks.
I do. Know
that's how you started your career here.
Yeah, if we can do that, I mean, just move it. But the next step I'm going to work on, Murph, is we're going to negotiate which day of the week we can get off. So if we get, something comes up, it could be a Tuesday this week. Next week, we're going to take Thursday, you know.
Steve, four-day week tasker, four-day work week tasker.
Listen, last week took it out of me. I was here all 5 days, and I was like, wow, I don't know, man.
Good show today to finish up with. The busy show, as we said, the entire team is out on the field right now in the sunshine. And that's going to end in a little bit. But coming up today on the show, 12:30, bottom of this hour, Ben Volin from the Boston Globe. He has attended the owners' meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. So he can talk about all of that, the rules changes, kickoff rule, ejections. He can talk about the change in the policy on pregame festivities and pregame activities, including honoring the national anthem. He can talk about the Patriots, too, since he covers the Patriots for the Boston Globe. And as we've talked about a couple times this week, there's intrigue there. You don't seem to agree, but I'm telling you, I was watching, was it ESPN or NFL Network last night? They did a whole – no, it was Teddy Bruschi. It was ESPN.
Yeah.
Even Bruschi said, who's Mr. Patriot, right?
Right.
Said, something's up. He said, there's something afoot there in New England, as I've been saying all week. He said, it's different. That's all I'm saying. It's different than what they've been doing there in New England as far as Brady at the OTAs in the offseason.
Yeah, we got all of that going, all right. So we're going to talk about that. We also have all the sound from Sean McDermott's 10:30 press conference. We're going to get to that. I'm going to go out and I'm going to see if I can get some live interviews. I think we're scheduled to talk to Zay Jones and Jordan.
Not Zay Jones.
Tre'Davious White and
Jordan Poyer.
So I'm going to try and get those two guys on. We do have some stuff to talk about. Zay Jones, who actually had knee surgery late last week, we learned today at Sean McDermott's press conference. We're going to show you that sound, or let you listen to that sound in a minute. But we got a lot of stuff going on, and it is a big day here at One Bills Drive for this time of year. It's about as busy as it's going to get, and our show reflects it.
Steve will have all of that after practice, some of the interviews. We'll pick up the news conferences with the quarterbacks. I believe all three of them, McCarron and Peterman and Josh Allen, are going to speak at the podium. We'll carry that for you live. And then Chris Brown will stop by in the two. Oh, Lorenzo Alexander at 1:30.
Oh, yeah.
He wants to talk about some of the rules changes, the kickoff rules in particular. And then Chris Brown, Bills Insider, coming up at the 2 o'clock hour to kind of recap what we've seen in this first week of OTAs. So,
a lot going on. There is a lot going on. We're going to be really busy today. It is fun, and you can kind of ride along with us. Murph and I also, Game 7 last night, the Caps beat. The hockey thing's still going on, which it makes me bitter here in Buffalo. But it's Ovechkin's going to go to the conference finals, first time in his 14-year career.
Finals.
He's in the NHL Stanley Cup finals against the Vegas Golden Knights, the pickup team from Vegas. And so that happened last night. LeBron James and the Cavs looked horrible last night against the Celtics. They're down 3-2 in that series, and then the Celtics could close them out in Cleveland tomorrow night.
I don't know how that's going to go. I watched mostly basketball, and just came away because Cleveland had been playing great, right? Won a couple of games in Cleveland. And I don't think it's a home away thing. When I watch LeBron now, I see sheer exhaustion.
Yeah,
I mean, he's wiped out. He's carrying that team. He doesn't have a lot of help. A couple of times in Cleveland earlier this week, he got help from other teammates. But you can't count on it, it appears, with that group. You know, they're not that good other than LeBron. He's good enough to keep him in it. I still think Cleveland's going to win that series, Steve. I really do. But it's LeBron may, you know, I was thinking, I found myself in the late stages of that game last night watching, thinking, what does LeBron do on this off day? First of all, they got to fly home to Cleveland, got to play again tomorrow night. But what does he do? Does he just lie down on a gurney and get like IVs and, you know, what does he do to get ready to go back? And because he's exhausted, he's carrying the whole team.
You really get a sense that he is exhausted. I mean, that's no other word for it. I mean, he's tired.
And he scored, it's what, been, 28 points?
He's got, yeah. Anybody else has the game LeBron had, he's the star of the game. But it's LeBron, so it's actually a down game for him. I mean, people
There's
are
so much
the bar is so different. And it's really interesting because you're right. They play really well when other guys contribute, when Kevin Love contributes, when the rest of those guys. And some nights they just don't show up.
Yeah.
They just don't show up, and I don't know what it is, whether it's something LeBron does or says or what some tone he strikes where it makes those guys disappear, or whether they're none of them are just consistent enough good basketball players to chip in. But they don't make shots. They can't finish at the rim. They don't rebound. They're, you know, defensively, they're kind of hanging in there, but I think a little bit of their defensive prowess goes to the fact that the Celtics aren't very good offensively. So it makes their defense on Cavs look better. But when, you know, the Celtics are hitting shots like they did last night.
Hit a lot of threes last night.
Yeah, that, you know, that changes everything. So I think Cleveland's the better team, but only, you know, when they ride that roller coaster. Some nights they're way better, and then other nights they're not so good, and the Celtics beat them, and they've beaten them 3 out of the 5 games so far.
The NBA playoffs have been interesting, and I didn't start watching in round one. I have over the last couple of weeks. But it seems to me that we haven't seen many pretty games played so far. It's a lot of ugly basketball. A lot of teams just sort of gutting out victories.
The best game was the Rockets-Warriors game the other night when the Rockets held them off at the very end, 1 by 2 or 3. And they even had to start, put time back on the clock after it was over.
Yeah.
So that didn't look very good for the club. But the game ended as it should have. The Rockets held on to win. And that was a great game. It was back and forth. The lead changed a bunch. There were big runs made by the Golden State Warriors that the Rockets fought off and fought through. So, you know, if the next game's like that, it's awesome. It'd be great. But the Golden State, when they're on, I don't think Houston can beat them.
Game 5 of that series tonight, 9:00, back in Houston. Now, we'll talk about that if you want, but let's talk about some football news. And we do have football news. And where do I want to start? I want to start somewhere. With our Twitter poll, I guess.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
The Twitter poll. Here's what I was thinking. I saw this the other day, and this gets into our Twitter poll. We are right now, this week, at the midway point of the NFL offseason. If you count Super Bowl 52, I believe it was, right, or 51? What was it this year?
52.
That day till the day when the season begins, the other day we hit the exact midpoint, believe it or not. Now, we've had the draft, we've had free agency, but yeah. So there's another half of the offseason to come up. But acknowledging that, thinking about the Buffalo Bills, thinking about a little bit about the news of the day as well, I want to get your sense about what's left for the Bills to accomplish here. They have 2 more weeks of OTAs and then 1 week of mandatory minicamp coming up, and then they're off, and then they go to training camp like 3rd week of July.
Wait a minute. So does the midway point go to the opening day?
I think I might go to preseason.
Or preseason game.
Preseason game. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got like a couple of weeks off the top of that for training camp. So you're counting on your fingers now. Don't do public math.
No, think about the public math. No, if the season ended on Super Bowl Sunday.
Which is like first week of February.
Right, so you got March, April, May, 3 months.
I'm counting on my fingers now.
June, July, August. And you play the preseason game in August.
Yeah, the first week of August. Yeah.
We're in the midway point of the offseason, okay?
Wow, that seems – see, I'm bummed now.
Why, you think
– we've done so much, and now we got all this way to go, and nothing's happening.
You got time off coming up, though. That'll make it better. You got vacation time and stuff coming up. Calm down. What's left for the Bills to accomplish here, right? You would think personnel-wise they might be almost done, finished, although they can make moves. They did last year. They've got work to do on the field as far as getting ready to play. But our question for you on Twitter poll and just to discuss on the phone lines is what's the biggest objective for the Buffalo Bills offseason program and why? Now, they've already started it, obviously. They're midway through the offseason. They've got a couple of weeks in now with the conditioning program and now OTA 1 week in. But what's the biggest objective for the Bills offseason program and why? That's our Twitter poll. We'll talk to you about it on the phone lines, 803-0550. Locally, outside Buffalo, it's 1-888-550-2550. On Twitter, on the poll, we ask you what's the biggest objective for the Bills offseason program and why. 38% of you say installing the new offense. All right. 33% of you say finding an early leader at the quarterback position. Which one of the three? 27% of you say finding the top 3 receivers. So that's a pretty even breakdown.
That's
about
a pretty
third
good,
of each.
That's a pretty good Twitter poll right there.
It is.
That's
and I had no input in it at all, which might be the key.
Which neither did I.
I think the hockey guys came up with this one. But it's a, while they were doing the hockey
the instigators
show,
came up with
instigator.
It.
Instigator. That's a good one because, look, there are three issues there, including one. We've got some news on the wide receivers here in a second. The quarterback competition is going to be big. And installing the new offense, Sean McDermott talked about today. It's evenly split. The biggest objective for the Bills offseason and why. Love to talk to you about it on the phone, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
Yeah, and that's this. All three of these, three of the top vote getters, they're all on the offensive side of the ball. So defensively, I think even for us here at One Bills Live, we kind of feel like the defense has kind of got it together. You look at that secondary, and you know they're going to be really solid. You look at Tremaine Edmonds, you know he's going to be an enormous upgrade for that linebacking core. And you see that, you know, the Trent Murphy and the star Lotulelei, you know the defensive front and Harrison Phillips being drafted, you know that's going to be kind of put together. But on offense, most of the question marks have to do, well, like the quarterback. You got Josh Allen. He's new. A.J. McCarron is new, and only with a limited repertoire or limited resume in the NFL, and of course Nate Peterman, and then the wide receivers is just, you know, there's too many guys we don't know about that, and somebody's going to have to contribute from that long list. So the offensive side of the ball, I think there's more moving parts at this point of the offseason, which is why the Twitter poll is all about that side of the football. But having said that, installing a new offense, and that's Brian Daboll and the quarterbacks and the receivers, you know, we didn't even say the O-line.
I know.
You know, I mean, that's
well, to that point, there's one tweet I'm going to read. The Buffalo Bro tweets in, where is the all-of-the-above choice?
That's a good point.
It's a good point.
It's that side of the football.
The only definite, in my opinion, he says, is McCoy. Biggest objective for the Bills during the offseason program. Now we got to let you know about the news today. Zay Jones, second-year wide receiver. We'll talk about this in a minute. I want to let Sean McDermott explain what his situation is. No more spring practices for Zay Jones. No word on whether he'll be ready for the start of training camp. McDermott did say, he was asked, are you concerned he won't be available at all for the 2018 season? He said, no, he's not concerned about that. Here's Sean McDermott at a 10:30 a.m. news conference today and what he had to say about Bill's second-year wide receiver, Zay Jones.
I'm going to start off with a little injury update. Zay Jones had surgery late last week and on his knee. He'll be out the remainder of this spring. Other than that, I don't have a timetable for you at this point, other than it was best for us to get this done now. And it's something that he had a little bit of an ongoing deal as he was rehabbing the knee. And of course, he was additionally rehabbing the shoulder as well. So from that, I'll open it up to your questions.
Where did that injury stem from? Was it from last year, or did he get hurt in the interim?
Yeah, just something that it's just been ongoing a little bit. So we'll just continue to monitor that moving forward.
Do you expect, I know you said beyond that you're not real sure, but I mean, you don't think his 2018 season is in any jeopardy at this point?
At this point, no, I'm not concerned about that at this point.
Okay, so that was the way the news conference started today, and I have to confess, Steve, I was surprised by that. We all knew, and it was talked about, Zay Jones had shoulder surgery right as the offseason began. And by all indications, all I knew was that was the only injury he was rehabbing from. But as McDermott said, his knee issue, whatever it is, has been ongoing. He wouldn't elaborate exactly what the knee issue was.
What happens sometimes, and I've seen it both in my career and other guys' careers and as I've covered the NFL, what will happen is they'll try, and there's nothing that is wrong with you that surgery couldn't make worse is kind of the mantra. So they kind of wait, and then they try and rehab out of it.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, they used to rehab out of it. They used to, in a lot of times, if you've got the commitment, and these guys do, you're going to try and rehab it and let it heal on its own without having to surgically repair something in either your shoulder, your knee, whatever, what have you. And if that doesn't go well at this point in the off season, you still have time to go in. Particularly, obviously, if it's not, I'm making complete assumptions here. Something that the timetable speaks to me of an arthroscopic thing. It's not like he's doing an ACL or something like that. Just going in to clean it out or whatever. But at this point in the offseason, he has to have plenty of time, whereas he could possibly even make it back for training camp. So they kind of try and rehab out of it, let it heal itself. And if it's not going well enough and if it's not healing the right way, then they go in and surgically fix it at this time of year so that when the league goes dark in June, July, he can rehab it, come back, and be ready to go at training camp. So it's not unusual for this to happen, and this is kind of the time of year when you'd expect it to.
off-season knee surgery late last week for Zay Jones, according to Sean McDermott. That's why we put one of our options for the trivia quiz, finding top three receivers. I think that sort of throws that all into question a little bit. We'll talk more about that in a moment. The other part that McDermott said that I found interesting, there's a lot of interesting stuff today, was, you know, and Chris Brown asked this question. We'll ask Brownie about it in the 2 o'clock hour. But he was almost asking McDermott, where is your focus? Where is your priority? Installing a new offense during these offseason workouts or settling up on a quarterback, you know, settling up the depth chart of quarterback? Here's what McDermott said about those two agendas, which are not necessarily competing agendas, but maybe not exactly in line. Here's what McDermott said in answer to that question.
Certainly there is a new offensive system going in its first year. Our defense and special teams are in their second and second plus years, really at this point. So we're a little bit at different stages in the growth cycle. The biggest thing, just really offensively, Chris, is just to make sure we build a strong foundation, not to try and match what the defense is doing in terms of where they are, but really develop a solid foundation from which we can build on as we move forward at the right pace. Quarterback's really no different in terms of Josh's growth, where he is right now, is establishing a strong foundation, and really no different with Nate and AJ as well. They're all playing at a high level, and Josh is taking reps, as I've said he would, with the threes, and then as you'll see, AJ and Nate are splitting reps with the ones, and both have had, all of them really have had their moments to this point in the off season, and you know, we look forward to them continuing to grow, continuing to embrace that growth mindset.
There you go, McDermott answering the question about those agendas. And look, Stephen, I get it. We're in May, and we got a ways to go until football begins. But today, after listening to McDermott, and as I said, it felt like training camp out there. I for one, am extremely glad it's not training camp, because today it hit me. They got a lot of work to do here. They got to, you know, they got to install the offense. I got to find a quarterback.
Find, you know, five offensive linemen.
Find, you know, settle up on offensive line. Find receivers who can play. They got a lot of work to do. It is, what, May 24th, so we're looking at 3.5 months until the season begins. A lot of things have to be answered in the next 3.5 months. Most of them have to be, at least get a pretty good answer on in the next 3.5 weeks. Before you take that, what, month vacation before they get to training camp?
Yeah,
and they got a lot of answers.
They got a lot of questions to answer. But also, and we got a tweet from UTEP Minor fan. I don't believe it can be the early lead at quarterback because Tyrod Taylor, led the entire camp in quarterback play. But we were told that everybody was even until after the season. We were told he was head and shoulders above everybody else. Remember last year when they said, "Listen, everybody's even. We're going to do it." And then Taylor emerged
3 years ago,
right? And then. Then we found out he was head and shoulders above everybody else. And a little bit of that is gamesmanship. They don't want anybody to know, any of their opponents
what do you mean,
to know.
When he won the job 3 years ago?
It doesn't say this. I'm just reading the tweet. But early on, in, I guess, in Tyrod's career here, you know, they're going to tell you what they want to tell you about the quarterbacks without telling you who they're going to play because they don't want anybody else to know. Every team is going to be listening to every other team's press conferences, particularly your division opponents, about what you're doing with your quarterbacks. So you're going to get some smoke screens, much like we did before the draft, about which guy they liked best or which guy they didn't like. And so we're going to have to just watch and watch with your own eyes what you think these quarterbacks are doing. The problem is when you see these guys making plays, you don't know whether they're throwing a football 101 play or a PhD level play where they had to make two reads and then make a check at the line of scrimmage, read the defense, and make the right throw. There's a difference. And the guy who reads the defense, makes the check, comes off his first option and comes over and makes a throw, and the guy drops it, you think he stinks. Well, the other guy runs a play that a six-year-old could run and makes a good throw, and you think he's a better quarterback. That's just the way it works. So there's a lot of stuff you don't know just by watching. But by the same token, Sean McDermott spent a lot of time at this, and we're not to that point yet with his team. Sean McDermott spent a lot of time, and then we're going to get to this sound in a minute, about, you know, they're just trying to get to know these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they want to know what makes them tick. What does this guy do really well? What does that guy not do really well? And they got to formulate game plans and roster spots after they've gotten to know these guys. And as fun as it was last year, and we've got some tweets about the building the winning culture here, and keeping it going, because that's really the thing that turned this team into a playoff contender, was the culture that they instilled. It's going to be a little bit of a different culture this year. because you got different players. It's just they got to start from scratch again. That's just the climate within the league right now.
Here's what McDermott's comments this morning forced me to do. Tap the brakes a little bit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, relax. We don't need to know this week who the quarterback is or the offensive line or the wide receivers. A good tweet on the tweet sheet from Minicamp Jack. He says it's all about installation, especially for a new offense and philosophy, adding more to the defensive system to improve there also. Training camp, he says, is where they will sort out the position battles. And he has a quick prediction. He thinks Brandon Riley will work his way into the top four at wide receiver come August. Based on the news today about Zay Jones, that's not outlandish to think Brandon
sounds
Riley
more,
would have something to
sounds
say.
Sounds more plausible
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And then, yeah, another one from Daryl F29, installing the new O. Once that's done, the quarterback situation will work itself out. The one who gains the best grasp of the offense, who will be the number one, who be the one who plays. By the way, I know elite was a strong word when making his point yesterday. I guess he tweeted yesterday, very good wouldn't fit. Yeah, you can't say very good. Elite takes fewer characters in Twitter. So you got
to. Excuse me, I didn't jump on him to say an elite. I just said, I don't know if I would call it elite. We agree, right?
Yeah,
we
I mean, that's the way it's got to be. The best guy's got to play. And they don't know who that's going to be because they don't know what these guys have to offer and how quickly they're going to grasp everything. And let's face it. Here's the thing. It's such a team sport. You really got to be neck deep in film study and also in the terminology of both sides of the football to even know who's playing well and who's not playing well. You can't just look with your eyes at practice and say, oh, this guy's really playing good. Or look at this guy. He made an interception. He's playing great. You know what? The guy might have been in the wrong spot. He might, and it's a great play, but he got lucky. That's not a great play. It's a bet. It's a mistake by the other team, or you know somebody else. There's another reason for the reason the guy made a pick. He was lined up on the wrong side of the field, so all of that stuff gets thrown into the mix, and it takes. You have to know your offense. You have to know what everybody's being asked to do. Look at who they're playing against, who's around them, and only then can you sort through who's going to be a good player. And it's impossible to sit up in the stands at St. John Fisher or even like you and I do. We stand right on the sidelines and watch these guys. It's impossible to tell who's really playing well and who's not. You kind of got to take the coach's word for it.
And for my part, it's too early. And remind me to tap the brakes. We got time here to settle these questions.
You've always questions. Been the voice of reason. I'm over here swilling the Kool-Aid down, thinking thinking this is going to be no,
but it
this is going to be a miracle year. We're the Vegas Golden Knights, you know. We're going
to. It reminded me today when Sean talked to him, he announced about Zay Jones going to miss the rest of the spring and some of the other issues. They've got issues to solve in the next couple of months. They do have time to do it. McDermott also talked about. The decision to release Incognito from reserve retired list. We'll hear that comment later on in the show. He says attendance at the offseason workouts has been outstanding, right around full participation, he says. And he had some early thoughts on the new pregame demonstration policy in the NFL. All of that coming up as the show moves along. Want to hear more from you. What's the biggest objective for the Bills offseason program, and why do you say that is? Got phone lines open for that at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The owners' meetings wrapped up yesterday, and Ben Volin of the Boston Globe was there. He'll join us next to talk about that, and he'll handle a couple of Patriots questions, I'm sure. We've got them. Come on back. We're just getting started here. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Drive. We are One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. It's a beautiful summer-like day here. Wouldn't you say it's kind of like summer, Steve?
Kind of. Like yeah. Oh, it's gorgeous.
They got the folks from Kaleida Health here.
Spectacular.
And they're going to have a little session over at the stadium with head coach Sean McDermott and GM Brandon Bean, and our man Chris Brown will moderate. That's coming up later today.
I keep telling you about the weather. When up here, like, given the winter that we had, which was
lengthy, horrific.
Yeah, lengthy to say the least. Yeah, when the trees leaf out, people bloom up here. The whole community
blooms. I feel like
blooms.
I'm blooming.
You're
I do.
Yeah.
I'm a bloom.
All right, don't get carried away. I'm just saying, you know, everybody's attitude. I mean, because, you know, we were beaten up in March and April in this region of the country. And now that it's nice, you can feel it. The neighborhoods are more active. Everybody, you know, it's just different. Everybody's attitude's different up here now. It's just awesome.
Not the problem.
One of my favorite times.
It is too. I agree. Not the problem in Boston, however, because they have regular Super Bowl championships there. They have the Celtics deep in the playoffs. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a guy who covers the Patriots for the Boston Globe. He has also covered two Super Bowl championship seasons with the Patriots. He's been around the NFL for more than 10 years. Happy to have Ben Volin from the Boston Globe on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Ben, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in beautiful, blooming Orchard Park, New York. Thanks for joining us here today.
Yeah, we got a 70-degree cloudless day here in Boston as well.
Oh,
so
it's great.
Absolutely. You just feel better about life when it's nice outside.
Yeah. How do you feel about the anthem policy that was approved yesterday? You were there, right, in Atlanta for the owners' meetings? What did you think?
Yeah, I was down there. I was surprised to see them kind of do a 180 from last year where they basically allowed the players to do it, and you had some of the owners like Shad Khan and I think Chris Johnson, New York, like joining in with the players. And now you have 31 out of 32 owners agreeing to this rule that bans players from kneeling. And,
yeah.
You know, they can call it a compromise, but it's clearly not a compromise. They have banned kneeling, and if if Art Rooney of the Steelers is to be believed, you can't raise a fist, you can't even lock arms. Anything like that will be called a protest. Now, I do think a lot of teams that even though they approve the rule, so the team will be fined by the league, and then the teams can also then pass – they can create their own workplace rules and kind of pass down a punishment to the players. And the Jets have already said, the Jets owner Chris Johnson said he's not going to punish his players. And I have a feeling some teams will also take that tack. But this was not a compromise. This was a faction of owners, I think led by Bob McNair and Jerry Jones down in Texas, that they did not want to see the players kneeling anymore because it was bad for business. And they were kind of afraid of taking on Donald Trump again this year.
Ben, obviously we follow the Bills, but I kind of keep an eye on the league, and it was my impression by the end of last season, maybe by mid-season last year, that the volume of protests had sort of evaporated. There were a couple kneelers during the anthem, but it wasn't a widespread thing. Why do you think the owners felt like they had to come out now in the dead middle of the offseason and make a statement like this?
Well, they had to. They felt like they had to address it for this season, and they kind of tabled it in March at the owners' meetings, and this is the last time they're all together before the season starts. So this was the time to do it. Why they chose to reverse course, I'm not really sure, and I agree with you. It was really contained to a few players in Oakland and a few players in Seattle and maybe five or six guys total. It had really died down as an issue. It became a big issue because of Trump. He's the one who escalated the whole thing. And then it eventually died down. And I agree. I think it really would have been a non-issue. Just a few players in a couple select cities would have been doing it, and they would have been able to move on. And so, again, it makes me wonder. People say, well, Trump won this time. I don't know about that. I think a lot of the owners were probably doing this for Trump. He has a lot of supporters among the ownership and guys who are big-time donors to his campaign and to his causes, and got some very right-leaning owners as well. So I don't know if this was them losing to Trump as much as it was working with Trump.
Is there any word on what the penalties are going to be? Because we heard, fines and all of that. I mean, is there going to be an escalating scale, or is it going to be anything that is deemed to be any kind of protest, like a fist raised or linking arms or, obviously taking a knee? Is there going to be an escalating scale, and is it going to go straight to the club itself, and it'll be up to the club to find the player, or how's that going to work?
I mean, those were my questions yesterday as well, and the NFL did not have the answers. They passed this thing, and they'll figure it out kind of later. As for the team fines, I don't know if it's an escalating thing because, Marshawn Lynch, we'll see if a guy like him ends up staying in the locker room or if he'll come out and purposely, want to kneel and push the boundaries and test the limits of this thing. We don't know how the fines are going to work from the league to the team, and each team then can set its own workplace rules. And that, so my question yesterday was, what's the scope of those kind of punishments? And the answer that I was getting was, well, it's kind of in the CBA. It'd be fines, and it's kind of spelled out in the CBA. So I think, as long as the owners stick to the letter of the CBA, they're not going to run afoul of the union and all those kinds. They can't. I don't think they can just willy-nilly, just start suspending players. And so that's where they're going to run into some issues. The other thing, the policy has 6 points to it, and the sixth point, I'm awaiting clarification on. It says the commissioner has the right to impose punishment against league personnel who do not stand and respect the flag. And my question is, does league personnel, does that include players, or are we just talking about coaches and officials and people that aren't, you know, under the umbrella of the NFLPA? Because if it does include players, now you're talking about Goodell can bypass the whole process, and he can punish the players himself if they kneel. So it's still, I think, very hazy overall, and it's a lot of technical issues that they have to figure out between now and the first preseason game.
Ben, it's a big issue. It was a big story last night. It was the lead story on Network Newscast 6:30 last night. But part of me wonders if maybe this goes away by the time they get playing in September. Do you know what I'm saying? Just as it did at the end of last year. It wasn't really a major issue. Could that happen again, do you think?
Well, now it is, because now we're going to sit there and take attendance and see which players are staying inside and is anyone taking a knee and defying it. And, I mean, those first preseason games, that's your first opportunity there. Yeah. And the first regular season games, and they've made it into an attendance-taking exercise now. So it's going to be an issue at least for the first few weeks of the season, and then maybe if it ends up being, you know, nothing, then it'll die down. But the NFL is ensured now that it's going to be something to watch for over the first, you know, certainly through the preseason and then probably the first couple weeks of the regular season.
I have one more question for you on this issue, Ben, and Steve might have more, but why? I get the NFL is the most popular sport. It is the, you know, the granddaddy of them all when it comes to American professional sports. But why does the NFL get caught up in this where the other professional sports do not? How do they dodge this bullet? How do they avoid this kind of controversy?
Well, Colin Kaepernick is the one who really made it an issue. I think it just happens to be that was a unique situation. No player in other sports has tried to make a political stand like this. You know, it was the NBA had this issue 20 years ago, whatever, with Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, and they came up with their policy, and they're the other league that forces players or requires players to stand at attention as well during the CBA, though I believe that was collectively bargained, unlike this, which is just being imposed on the players. But this was a thing really started organically by Colin Kaepernick, and then Eric Reid and a couple of the 49ers started doing it, and all of a sudden it was catching on, and it was at a time in the country that it was pretty raw for a lot of African-American people, where you saw they were being killed by police and by citizens, and there weren't being repercussions for the people that were involved. And so, you know, it just kind of grew from there, and then it was dying down, and then Trump just poured gasoline on the fire last year when he started talking about it and calling the players out and almost daring them to take a knee. And I think they're kind of doing it again. They're daring these players to speak out, and some of them, there's already talk about, well, we're especially going to do it because they tell us that we can't. So again, it's like every time you think this thing is ending, someone just lights a match and reignites it.
Yeah, there's no question it's not going to go away, and now it's been put on the front burner. It's going to be kept there until something changes, not either by time and or by action, and they're going to have to confront it again head on. It's not going to go away.
No, it's not going to go away at first. It's going to be an issue, like I said, through the preseason and through the early portion of the regular season. But, you know, if we go 3 weeks and, you know, no one's really doing it, and sure, some players are staying in the locker room, but if they are following the rules, then it will probably go away. But, you know, if the players challenge it, and, you know, then we'll see what happens. And Donald Trump seems to revel in it, too. I mean, let's not forget that. I mean, the owners, some of them were admitting yesterday after the meeting that, sure, absolutely, they took Donald Trump's response into account, and what's he going to say on Twitter if we do this, and what's he going to say on Twitter if we do this. And so maybe every time it tries to die down, you know, the commander-in-chief is the one who's reigniting it.
Hey, Ben, I got a question for you about another thing that I don't think it was a formal agenda item, but I wonder if you picked up much discussion among owners about the Supreme Court ruling on gambling, on you know, football books, sports books in states.
It's funny. I was talking to my buddy Dan Kaplan at the Sports Business Journal yesterday at the meeting, and we remarked that gambling was shockingly very, you know, not discussed, at least among media and like, you know, interview sessions, that it really became a back burner type of issue when you're talking about the anthem, the Panthers sale, the kickoff rule, the helmet rule. Gambling was not, I'm sure it was discussed plenty behind the scenes by the owners, but it was not a hot topic publicly with the media. And sure, I think the NFL, they've been preparing for this moment, and they're looking into what kind of sponsorship deals does this open up now, and how can they kind of get a piece of the pie. You hear a lot of these talked about the integrity fee that they're trying to get from casinos now and from the states. So they're in a little bit of a wait and see mode because it's, you know, no one really knows how this is going to unfold on a state by state basis yet. But I know the NFL, I think they're asking for a uniform standards across the country. They're going to lobby Congress to enact uniform standards, which will make things a lot easier for the leagues when they're trying to get a piece of the pie. But I'd say right now everyone is definitely in wait and see mode on that.
What else is going on with the kickoff rule? I mean, I know that it was kind of a rubber stamp issue. You know, they kind of went with the football experts, the special teams coaches who came up with these proposals. Has there been any talk about what it's going to look like in the stats? I mean, is the return game going to open up? Are they worried about any of the unintended consequences that these these changes to the kickoff rules will cause?
Yeah, it's interesting. Talking to Rich McKay yesterday, he's the Falcons president and the chairman of the competition committee. They're hopeful that if the play works out that the way they hope it does, that not only will it be safer and reduce concussions, but it should open up the field and make it more exciting for kick returners. And he even noted yesterday that the last several years, the whole goal has been to reduce kickoff returns and have fewer concussions. But now they're hopeful that there are more plays because they think that having, first of all, no running starts for the kicking team, that's good. So it takes longer for guys to reach top speed. And then you've got eight guys on the receiving team that have to be within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage. So that's, 19 of the 22 bodies are all right there, kind of condensed, and they're not having the high-impact collisions that I think often lead to concussions. Then they eliminate wedge blocks, and you have to be evenly spaced. You can't, overload a side. So they're really doing everything they can to make it a safer play. We'll see. We'll see if it reduces concussions. They only passed it for 1 year. They're absolutely willing to take another look at it, and it doesn't seem like they're totally married to the play, that if the concussions aren't cut down, I think they're willing to, you know, completely take the kickoff out of the game. But, you know, by having all those players close to the line of scrimmage as well, you know, when your kick returner catches the ball, hopefully the defense is still 30 yards away, and so it might open up the field and create more exciting kickoff returns, which everyone who watches football, that's one of the best plays, biggest plays in the game, is to watch a big game-breaking kickoff return.
And
so that's just in a perfect world, and obviously there will be unintended consequences, but this could be a good solution for them.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I got out of the meetings in New York was that their willingness to tweak it using football experts to do that, and also I think they are committed to saving it, but they have also put it out there. And the reason they got guys ired, you know, kind of upset about it is because they said they are willing to take it out. But before they do, they're going to make every effort to change it substantially to make it safer. And if they can do that, they'll leave it in, even if it means, you know, big plays every week in that part of the game.
Well, and you know the NFL. They don't like drastic changes. So removing the kickoff is certainly a drastic move. It's been a part of the game for the last 100 years. So, absolutely, it's good to see them trying some new things before just giving up on the play. And so, you know, maybe it cuts down on concussions some this year, but not enough, so they continue to tweak it. They're willing to look at this thing, and I think they want to do whatever they can to try to save the kickoff. But if you know, the concussion rate on a kickoff is 5 times that of a normal running or passing play, according to the NFL. So if that isn't cut down at all, then I think they'll very much look at eliminating the play.
Ben Volin covers the Patriots for the Boston Globe. I have one Patriots question for you, Ben. What are we to make of Brady's absence from the offseason workout? Steve and I have kind of bantered it back and forth all week. I think it means something, doesn't it, based on his history and the way he used to approach these workouts?
I mean, absolutely it means something. For the last 7 years, he's been a dedicated off-season participant. You know, they always talk about how he's the leader, and by him working hard, it trickles down to the rest of the organization. He always talks about how it's the time to get on the same page with the receivers. That's when you make the mistakes, worked out the kinks, put things in the bank for the regular season. So, you know, that's what they've said for the last 7 years, and there are plenty of quotes of him saying that. And so now him staying away, it's a clear message that, you know, he's obviously wants to take some time and spend it with his family and do his off-field businesses and just kind of do his own thing. He spoke at a conference in L.A. and he went to Brazil with his family and went to the Met Gala. So he's getting all that out of his system now. But, you know, other than mandatory minicamp, June 5th through 7th, it doesn't sound like he's going to be participating in OTAs. And a lot of that is, you know, what's going on with him and Belichick, and Brady's just kind of tired of just Bill Belichick's very tough and grinding system. And Brady says, you know, he doesn't always feel appreciated there. And he feels like after 19 years, he should have a little more leeway than he does. And the Alex Guerrero, his body coach, getting kicked out of the team flight and out of the stadium as well. It's all that's kind of playing into it. So, I mean, absolutely, the fact that your leader of your team is, he's the only quarterback in the NFL not at OTAs right now. So I know they're voluntary, and it, you know, I'm sure he'll be fine this fall, but it's definitely glaring that he's not there right now.
How much? 13 wins instead of 12 wins?
Yeah, I mean, how much is it going to affect him when they tee it up on opening day and kick it off with these new kickoff rules? Is it really going to come back to haunt him that he wasn't here and wasn't at Patriot Place in May? I'm kind of thinking it doesn't, and I think also after a 19-year career with the same head coach, I think those guys are kind of past pettiness, don't you?
I can't say that for sure. I'm not in either of their minds. I just know that right now it's not a very good relationship between Brady and Belichick. And yeah, Brady will be here this fall, and I'm sure early in the season, I'm still counting on 12 wins and AFC Championship game, and I think it'll be same old. But you know, he's coming for 3-day minicamp, and that'll be it. And so really, training camp is when he's going to get his first, you know, real throws in with Jordan Matthews and Sonny Michel, the new running back, and, you know, all the new personnel that they're going to have on offense. Is it going to be a total game changer for Brady? Probably not. But I think, you know, there's some value in these practices. That's why the NFL holds them. It's very noteworthy that Brady's not here right now, and I don't think it'll have a huge effect in the fall. But he's also opening himself up to criticism. If he doesn't have this amazing start, it's, well, he didn't put in the time in the offseason, and he didn't take good enough care of his body. Like, he is opening himself up for criticism now by staying away.
Hey, Ben, thanks for this. Great to talk to you. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
I know you guys in Buffalo love to hear that. So.
Yeah, well, yes, we do.
All right.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, well, thanks a lot for having me.
Ben Volin, Boston Globe NFL Patriots writer, covered the Patriots through their Super Bowl run. He's been around the league for 11 years. We'll talk more about that, Steve and I, along with a lot of other stuff when we return. It is One Bills live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. The Bills practice is over. Week one of OTA is over. Those players will be back next week for another 3-day organized team activity
OTAs.
Session. OTA. Steve is going to head out in a minute or two to talk to some of the players, and we'll pick up the news conferences from the quarterbacks who are meeting today.
I'm supposed to talk to Trey White and
Jordan Poyer.
Jordan Poyer. So two DBs, and that'll be good. We'll get them on and have that sound.
That'll be good.
In a minute.
You're confident.
Yeah,
that'll be good. Should be good. Wait a minute.
It
what happened?
Be.
You just
it
guaranteed it and then you
it's
backed off
well,
a little bit.
Well, you know, here's the thing. They're going to get off. Listen, I remember what it's like to be a player. You get off the field and you come over and they know they're supposed to talk to me. So they're going to come over and they're going to show up at the exact same time, right?
Yeah.
So
one
then
of them's going to have to wait.
Right. Someone's going to have to wait. And then it's like, you know, I want to get off, you know.
Welcome to the media, Steve. This is what we deal with on a regular basis.
And I remember,
you should be able to bridge that
gap. I remember
gap.
What a jerk I was as an athlete, and I just expected to be treated that way.
What do you mean? Past tense?
Yeah. that's a good one.
Hey, Ben Volin had a lot of interesting things to say about the pregame protests, and I don't know how that's going to play out, but about the kickoff rule. What did you make of what
see,
he said about
I'm kind of the same way on these kickoff rules. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they come about. I think, hopefully, for me, I want it to lead to more kickoff returns, but yet make the kickoff returns a much safer play, which I think the alignment issue is really going to do that. The other thing is I hope the league is okay making the play more important, making it more unpredictable, making it more dangerous for both sides of the team, you know, for both sides, both the kicking team and the return team. I hope they open it up. The return game, a lot of us, guys I've spoken to, we're going to have Lorenzo Alexander on the show later on in the show, and he's going to talk about what he thinks it's going to mean. And I think both of us agree. I think it's going to open up the return game.
I hope so.
And that means teams will really want to kick it deep, But it also means you kick it deep. If you don't get it really deep, they're going to bring it out. And it's a and I want it to be more of a coin flip as to whether that guy gets it out to the 50, if not snapping it off the whole way. I don't have a problem with that.
I hope you're right. I guess what makes me skeptical is that their primary goal here, Steve, is to avoid injuries, to avoid headshots. And if it gets to be too competitive a play or too much, you know, too much running around the field with big hits, that's not what they're looking for. That's not what they want.
That's what I'm saying, though. I think that even just because you're opening it up to bigger returns doesn't mean it's going to be a more unsafe play. Because the problem with it was everybody at the return game is trying to snap off a big return, so they're kind of willing to kind of go for it. Plus, you got professional special teams players. They get one shot, then they come off the field. They're going to take that one big shot to see if they can get a big play on their one opportunity for that series, and that's not going to change. But if you limit their ability to have collisions rather than making blocks, and the difference being on these blocks, it'll be more like a punt block where both guys are running side by side and you got to block him. So I'm excited about it. I don't know how it's going to turn out, but hopefully it'll be like that. We're going to talk to Lorenzo Alexander later on the show.
Practice is over. We're going to hear from some of the players coming off the field when we come back. So come on back as well. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott announced today that wide receiver Zay Jones had knee surgery late last week. He is out for the rest of the offseason, the spring portion of the offseason anyway. Jones had surgery last week. He will miss the remainder of the spring, according to McDermott. McDermott said he has no timetable other than it was best to get the knee done now. And at this point, McDermott said it appears that no part of Zay Jones' 2018 season is in jeopardy. He already was recovering from off-season shoulder surgery for a torn labrum. Now Zay Jones has a knee to go along with that. Bills just now coming off the field after the third and final organized team activity workout of the week. First week of OTAs is over. They'll be back at it again for three more workouts next week, three more the following week, and then they get to the mandatory minicamp in mid-June. NBA Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals is coming up tonight. Two games apiece for Golden State and the Houston Rockets, and that's a 9 o'clock tip-off tonight in Houston. Last night, the Celtics beat the Cavaliers 96-83 in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and they now lead that series 3-2. Celtics rookie Jason Tatum had 24 points as Boston earns its 10th straight victory at home. They'll play their Game 6 tomorrow night. Hockey tonight, Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals is tonight. The Capitals have advanced to the Hockey is ready for the finals as the Capitals shut out the Lightning 4-0 in Game 7 last night. They advanced to the finals for the first time in 20 years. They'll take on the Vegas Golden Knights in the finals. Game 1 is coming up on Monday. And the Buffalo Bisons had a 6-game win streak snap last night, a 7-2 loss to the Syracuse Chiefs. They're heard home against the Chiefs this afternoon, 1:05 first pitch at the downtown field, Coca-Cola Field. NFL approved a new policy on pregame ceremonies yesterday at the owners' meetings. The policy requires all team and league personnel to stand if they're on the field. They have the option to stay in the locker room during the anthem. More on that during the course of the show. John Murphy and Steve Tasker here. Steve is out in the main area of the field house getting interviews. We hope to have some of those interviews for you on the air. We're waiting in time, and we can go to the podium when the quarterbacks, we believe A.J. McCarron will be the first quarterback that we go to and pick up his news conference live as the players come off the field. Let's go to the Twitter poll today, and you're welcome to participate. Maybe you have some thoughts on this. Phone line's open if you do, 803-0550 and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. We're about midway through the offseason for the Bills and everybody else in the NFL, just about midway. Want to know from you, what should the Bills' number one priority be in this offseason? What do they have to get done? It seems like a lengthy list today when you hear about the injury to Zay Jones, some of the other issues. What's the Bills' biggest objective for their offseason program and why? Again, we'd love to hear you on the air. We've got phone lines open at 803-0550 and outside Buffalo, 888-552-550. On the Twitter poll so far, installing the new offense is the leader. 43% of you say installing the new offense is the number one priority for the Bills right now. 28% of you say finding an early lead in the quarterback derby. Who's going to be, what's the quarterback depth chart going to look like? 28% of you say that should be the biggest objective for the Bills in the offseason program. 27% of you say finding the top three receivers. Zay Jones, I think, complicates that matter now since he's out for the rest of the spring. And 2% have something else in mind. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Now we go to Bills quarterback A.J. McCarron at the podium after today's OTA workout.
Them goes. I know Sean had told us that he was going to speak to the team and everything about, you know.
Yeah, to be honest, I haven't watched any TV. I mean, the only TV I've watched is the finals at night, but usually I'm drawing plays and making sure I'm going over everything. So, to be honest with you, I haven't even seen what the policy is, like what the ruling is or passed on, or I have no clue, so I couldn't give you an honest answer on
it's
that.
Basically, to boil it down, it's players either need to stand when they're on the field or stay off the field and wait till the national anthem is over. Yeah. You know, I guess just on the outside of it, is it nice to hear that they're at least looking in and pursuing a way to resolve this, if you will, call it a resolution?
I mean, really, truly, like, I'm just going to do whatever coach tells us to do. And then, I mean, those decisions are bigger than me, and higher up, so I'm just going to go with whatever they decide. So,
AJ, what's it been like sharing the reps and the quarterback competition so far? I know it's still early.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. You compete. You know, I shared reps before, so but it's fun. I mean, we're out here. Everybody's kind of really learning, you know, especially speaking for myself, like just trying to get timing with guys, you know, first live action. But it's been fun, and it's always fun to compete.
Kelvin Benjamin has struggled with some injuries. Coach said that he's healthy right now and it looks really good. What do you see with Kelvin out there so far?
Yeah, Benji's a, you know, great player, huge target. I mean, really, if you just put the ball around him, he does a great job of snagging it and making a play. So he's been awesome to work with, and I'm looking forward to, you know, future.
AJ, what's the challenge in juggling learning the aspect and timing while also competing to try to, you know, to gain an upper hand in this competition?
So
what's the challenge in trying to do both? Because you're learning at the same time, so mistakes will be made, but you're also trying to be as much on point as you can.
Yeah, I mean, you just go out and play. I mean, you really just try to take what they give you. I mean, if it's a home run, then it's a home run. If not, then, you know, if you have to throw it to the back for 6 yards, then, you know, you just live with it. That's part of the game. I mean, that's how you win. You can't always have the home run hitter. And so I think just taking what the defense gives you and just playing your game, it'll be fun.
How much so far have you gone along with Josh and looked over plays together and schemes together and worked together on the offense?
I mean, well, we all meet as QBs every day, so and every morning, and so it's really, I guess you could say, every day. I mean, we've been doing that.
What's the relationship been like with Nate and Josh so far?
They're great. Two great dudes. Nate's like a walking angel. I mean, he's one of the nicest guys you ever meet. But I mean, Josh has been awesome to work with, and trying to help him in every way I can. But we have a really good room. It's fun to be a part of.
Brian seems to be really hands-on in working with you guys individually out there in between drills or going over certain aspects of techniques and stuff like that. You know, compared to some of the maybe guys you've had in the past, you know, is that a little more so than you've seen in the past?
Well, I've only had, are you talking from an OC standpoint?
Yeah,
or
from an OC standpoint, just working with.
No, I mean, Hugh J was real hands-on when I was in Cincy, and then Zamp was the same way when he took over. So I mean, that's nothing new for me.
Is there a big benefit that as a quarterback when you've got a guy that's going over things pretty immediate right after they happen?
I mean, listen, you can talk all you want out there, but you still have to see it because, I mean, the camera doesn't lie. I mean, the human eye will lie sometimes. I mean, you'll think you see something and it doesn't happen. So, but the camera doesn't lie. So, I mean, you can talk about it, but until you actually see it on film and then talk about it in the film room, then I mean, you just try to take quick notes if you can. But if not, go on to the next play, play the game.
AG, from your perspective, what are your early impressions with Tremaine Edmonds?
Yeah, I mean, he's just a big dude on defense. He covers a lot of ground. But other than that, I mean, I'm not over on that side, so I can't give you, you know, an answer on how he's doing over there. But, I mean, he's a big dude for sure, and I feel like he's, you know, he's done well.
In your eyes, how do you think you did today on the field?
I did good. We took care of the ball. We took what they gave us. We had some big plays, so thought it was good.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, awesome.
Bills quarterback after today's OTA. Steve Tasker's back in studio. He was out there doing a couple interviews. Today's one of those days. I know these days, last day of the week, long weekend ahead. Players are in a hurry to get out of here, aren't they? Right? You probably ran up.
Players aren't the only ones, but yeah, there's a lot of people running for the exits. But yeah, but yeah, I got a chance to talk to Jordan Poirier and Tre'Davious White. We'll hear that sound in a couple of minutes. But we're also kind of once practice breaks and these guys are media availability, we kind of start juggling time slots. We're going to try and catch Josh Allen live as he comes to the podium. So if we start talking about what AJ McCarron said and we cut it off, it's because we're going to go live to Josh Allen. But AJ McCarron, I think it's interesting. You're going to get a lot of different questions to AJ McCarron than you're going to get to Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think about what you want to know from each of those guys. It's completely different. AJ, it's like you heard it. What's the offensive coordinator like? Compare this to Cincinnati. What about the players you played with in Cincinnati? So he's got a resume that demands some questions about what he thinks and what he feels because his opinion about the NFL holds a little more credibility.
He's something to compare
it to. Yeah, he holds a little more credibility than a guy like Josh Allen.
I got a kick out of him. A couple of questions, not finding fault with the questions, but he was asked, do you spend much time talking with Josh Allen? And basically McCarron looked at the questioner and said, yeah, I'm in the meeting room with him every day. I do talk to him quite a bit.
What do you think they're doing in there? Yeah.
The other one,
meditating?
These players are in a difficult spot today with yesterday's vote on the anthem. Obviously, it just happened, and nobody quite knows how that's going to play out. You know, Sean McDermott talked about that a little bit earlier today. But McCarron at the end just said, I'm just going to do whatever coach tells us to do. Most players are probably in that camp, right? Like, I'm a football player. I don't want to get caught up in this. I don't want to say the wrong thing. Don't want to offend anybody. Many players probably are indifferent to whatever statements are being made. Look, I do think, and I asked Ben Volin this, I think part of what we're dealing with here, Steve, is a quiet news cycle news item right now. And I don't know if it'll die. And Ben's right. First preseason game, it'll be a big issue. But I think it'll die down again, just as it did last year. By the end of last year, nobody talked about pregame protests.
Yeah.
You know, it'll happen again.
I
think McCarron, who's been around, knows that.
I think it will be an issue if one of the players decides to make it an issue, just like the way the whole thing began. And that's what
or
it's
if somebody
be.
On the outside decides to make it an issue.
Yeah. Certainly, the president is in the middle of this. Everybody thinks the president of the United States is going to come in, and he may, but I think it'll be off the table. Ben Volin said, they're going to be taking attendance. Who didn't? And they're going to have to watch who comes out of the tunnel after the anthem, who comes out onto the field after the anthem is played, if that is an issue, if that actually happens. Or if a player just says, you know what, I don't care. I'm going to pay the fine. I'm going to take a knee during this anthem. I'm going to do it every year, and I'm going to accept the consequences. And that will force it back onto the table because he's not going to bow down to a silent protest.
Well, I'll talk about this all day, but you know what happened here last year, which I thought was a really good outcome? There were protests. Some of the players elected to participate in pregame protests. There were plenty of discussions, and I think as a result of some pretty intensive conversations between ownership and coaching staff and the players, they started to do positive things. Lorenzo will talk about this when he joins us in a couple of minutes. You know, the relationship they have with some local groups, I can't remember the name of them exactly, Lorenzo will know, was directly a result of the aftermath of the pregame protest. Hey, Josh Allen's the rookie standing by at the podium. Let's listen into him right now.
You know, everybody's learning a new offense. How is that? You know, what do you think about the challenge of now that you're into it, learning the new terminology and all that?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's going through the same thing right now. You know, all quarterbacks are still trying to figure out entirely what's going on with everybody. That's the tough part about being quarterback. You're supposed to know what everybody's doing on the field. You know, AJ and Nate have done a really good job. They know what they're doing out there, and they've, you know, given me a lot of knowledge, and they've helped me along the way. Obviously, we're only 3 days in, so we got a lot more install. You know, we got a lot more to do before we can say we're ready.
Jordan, I know Jordan Palmer worked with you like on studying a system for learning. Is that helpful? Have been helpful to you, or are you?
Absolutely. And it's not that we learned a system before; it was learning how to learn a system. So it was, you know, techniques we can use to learn formations, things we can tell ourselves when we hear a concept and go out there and try to remember it. It's just kind of sequencing, and Jordan did a good job with me and, you know, Sam with that.
Josh, have you ever been third on the depth chart as a quarterback on a team?
Yeah, absolutely. My junior college year, I was actually maybe third or maybe even fourth my first three or four games.
What's the challenge then in being that far on the depth chart while trying to learn and compete and all of that?
Well, the challenge with it is getting a limited amount of reps. You know, especially yesterday, it was split up where the ones and twos got more than the threes. But at the same time, it's me standing back there and trying to take mental reps, learning from what AJ and Nate are doing, you know, staying engaged the entire time.
So I kind of flipped. You got a bit more today, right?
No, we all got the same today. Yeah.
So that said, if you're not getting as many reps, is there sometimes a tendency to say not try to do too much to show, you know, hey, I want more reps, I want to show that I belong here, and you kind of have to not be too aggressive maybe at times?
I mean, that's a really good question, and some people handle it differently. I'm going out there, I'm trying to do everything right. I'm not trying to do too much, and you know, whatever Coach Dable and Coach Coley are preaching to me is what I'm going to go out there, I'm going to do. I'm going to trust my teammates, put the ball where it needs to be, let them go make some plays, and it's as simple as that.
Coach Dable seems to be pretty hands-on. Can you just comment about what it's been like with Dable so far?
It's been awesome. You know, he's very energetic. He's very engaged, you know, with myself, Nate, and AJ. You know, meetings are awesome. He's super talkative. He's got a lot of information. You know, I definitely am in a really good situation here, being able to learn from AJ and Nate, and then, you know, a coach like Dable.
There was also one play out on the field. You threw a touchdown pass to Ray Ray. You got really hyped afterwards. Can you just comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, there's nothing better than throwing touchdowns. So even in practice, it gets the juices flowing a little bit. So I just wanted to go out there and let him know he ran a really good route, and he did what he's supposed to do. And seems as when everybody does their own job, things tend to work out for the better.
Josh, you said at rookie minicamp you're going to kind of feel your way out once the veterans got here. Been a few weeks, you know, that you've all been acclimated. Where are you in that process of feeling your way out on this team and being outspoken or whatever as a rookie?
You know, it's been great. You know, the guys that are here, the locker room that we have, the culture that, you know, Coach McDermott has established here, it's very family-like. So getting in and establishing relationships with the vets, you know, guys like Lorenzo Alexander and LeSean McCoy and Kelvin Benjamin, you know, and I got Eddie Yarbrough, who played at Wyoming with me, and there's tons of other guys, but, you know, those are the guys that have been more notable in the past. But, you know, it's been good to get in with these guys and kind of share stories and just kind of see where each other comes from. And, you know, it's been a fun process. There's a lot of names involved with it. You know, it's getting better each day, just remembering faces and along with the names. But, man, this is a fantastic locker room that we got here.
Eye-opening is it, or maybe not, to see the DBs at this level compared to college and how tight they are, how tight the windows are that you have to fit things in, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, the game just moves a little bit faster. You know, it's not that these guys run so much faster, they're so much bigger than the guys in college, it's that they're smarter. You know, they know where they need to be, they get the route recognition a lot faster, a lot quicker, they're jumping on balls now. You know, and we got guys that are fantastic players, Micah Hyde and Poyer, and then you got, you know, a vet like Vontae Davis out there, and he's pushing our receivers to be better and, you know, making sure that our as quarterbacks, we put the ball where it needs to be.
How much will that help your growth and maybe even quicken the curve working against Trey White, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, as you just mentioned? I would think going against that group only makes you better quicker.
Absolutely. You know, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And that's kind of the mindset that, you know, when you practice, you should have. You should be able to look across to the guy next to you and the guy that you're competing with and say, I'm going to make you better, you're going to make me better, and go at it like that.
Mike, the 3 days how the reps were doled out, how much of that was kind of pre-planned? And, you know, when they sat you down and said, this is how we want to develop you, did you kind of know going in that you would start at the bottom and work your way up?
You know, I didn't know that. You know, I expected it. You know, I'm not even looking at it that way. I'm looking to get better every day. You know, whatever reps I'm getting with whoever I'm out there with, I'm here to learn, you know, from obviously from Nate and AJ and then from Coach Dable and through experiences on the practice field. You know, balls that I can throw at the professional level and balls that I can't. And being out there, like you said, with the guys that we have out there, it's definitely a quicker learning curve just because of the guys we got are extremely good. So the process has been fun, and all you got to do is trust it.
Is there more pressure because you want to work your way up faster, or less pressure because you're starting at the bottom and there's only one place to go but up?
There's really no pressure. You know, there's nothing that's been said to me to, you know, make me feel uncomfortable or feel worried about anything at all. I'm here to get better. I'm here to, you know, be the best teammate, the best quarterback that I can be, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Josh, how comfortable are you feeling in the pocket right now on the field?
Feeling good. You know, the drills that we're doing with Coley and Dable are really good. They definitely apply to in-game and in-practice situations, just feeling pressure from one side and subtle movements and setting your feet now and putting the ball where it needs to be.
You've now spent a couple weeks in Buffalo itself, mm-hmm. Western New York. What jumps out at you?
Obviously the people. You know, the Bills Mafia is an energetic group. They're very passionate. You know, I've gone out to eat a few times, and you know, the welcoming by the people of the community has just been fantastic. You know, we got a lot of good people, a lot of good hardworking people up here that really love football, and that's the type of environment that I want to be in.
Any of those two more, please.
Say that again.
Any of those meals, wings?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Having battled against adversity time and time again, we saw that in Tim's excellent series. What prevents you, or what continues to motivate you, in the sense that here you are, a number 7 draft pick. And some, to some people, it might say, hey, I've arrived. What continues to motivate you and prevent you from feeling that sense of comfort in knowing that somebody hasn't overlooked you as far as the Bills and the number 7 pick?
Yeah. You know, I'm a very self-motivated guy, to be honest. You know, I want to play this game for as long as I can and as long as my body will let me. So I'm going to do everything right, and that's what motivates me, is to play this game for 15 plus years and be known as one of the greats to play this game. You know, you talk about the vets in the league right now, like Drew Brees and Tom Brady, Big Ben, Philip Rivers. I mean, the list goes on and on. But to be talked about like one of them, you know, it takes a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of success. And in order to, you know, get success, it takes a long time to accumulate over the years. And that's what I want to do. Perfect. Thank you, guys.
That's it. Josh Allen, Bills rookie quarterback, first-round draft pick, 7th overall. Josh Allen, quote, nothing better than throwing touchdowns. You indicated that's probably because he's young, right?
He's a young guy.
I like that quote.
What a sweet kid.
I'm going to get T-shirts printed up like that. Nothing better than throwing touchdowns, Josh Allen.
Yeah,
what a sweet kid.
What a sweet kid.
it was great, though. I like his approach. Yeah. I like the fact that he's 22 years old, right? He's young. He is. I think this is going to work out well, folks. I have a good
There's
feeling
some,
about
it. Of course, we're dissecting everything he said as if it
yes,
was
we are.
As if the entire season rode on a May interview. But there's a lot in there to like. I liked his take, and immediately what he said is, why is it so hard, or what's different about standing back there now if you were 3rd on the depth chart now? What's the difference? He goes. He knew right away, hey, it's not getting reps. The reps are what the big difference is. And, you know, he knew it's taking mental reps. You got to stay engaged when you're back there. And that is exactly right. I know that the best players always do that. When the number ones are not in there, they're engaged. They see what other guys see. They want to talk about it. They want to – and in fact, you know, a good quarterback like a Ben Roethlisberger, a Dan Marino, Jim Kelly, Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, they're taking reps, and they're seeing it, and they talk about to their backups what they saw, why they saw this, and they talk about it in the film room and the quarterback room. And then when they're not in there, it's interesting for the good quarterbacks. They want to know what their backup quarterback, what do you see? How do you see it? What's your thought process? Because they learn from each other. And the way another quarterback views a play, a lot of times it's exactly the same as him. But some other times his reasoning for why he sees it is just as important as the throw he makes because it teaches other guys in the room. And that's his ability to do that and his wisdom at knowing that that is important was pretty telling, I thought.
Here's me tapping the brakes again. Where are the Bills? Look, and it's important. And as he said, and I think A.J. McCarron said it too, they've got three practices in really. Up until right. this week, it's been conditioning work. And, yes, a little bit of individual drills and throwing walkthroughs. The last 3 days have been the closest thing we've had to real practice, these OTAs. They are practices. They look like practices. And so to get caught up in where you are in the depth chart, I love the fact that Josh Allen had basically, yes, you're right, doesn't get the reps, but there's no statement being made there. You got two other quarterbacks who've been around here for a month at least before Josh Allen was even a Buffalo Bill. Of course they would get the early reps here this first week. A lot of time for things to happen. This is me tapping the brakes. A lot of time for Josh Allen to rise or fall, McCarron to rise or fall.
Do you Peterman ever get tired of being the voice of reason?
Yeah, I do. I do.
Because I don't like being the voice of reason, man. I am all in all the time. I'm like totally
what do you mean, voice
the,
of reason? I'm totally I'm telling you like it is.
I'm polypositive all the time, man. I'm like, yeah, this is it. This is awesome.
No, it's May. There's time. There's plenty of time.
You're right. You're right. But you know what? And I told you this too. I remember what it was like being a first-year player, and you're going out there. And there are guys out there like Austin Prohl and Robert Foster, guys we've had on, young rookie free agents, and Gerhard DeBeer.
Nice.
Who's out there. And, you know, you get this idea that, man, I can make the team today.
Yeah.
I can make the team today. I can impress guys today, and they'll never forget it. You know, that kind of thing. And you're just not going to get it done. It's just not the time for that. And like you're right, you got to pump the brakes. But it is still, it is exciting to be out there and to see, you can feel it in the air, that another team is going to take place in 2018. And they have a lot of reasons to think they might be pretty good.
We're going to talk with one of those players, a veteran who's been around for a long time. He has some thoughts on the rules changes, some policy changes in the first week of OTAs. Lorenzo Alexander standing by to join us live here in studio when we return. Steve Tasker, John Murphy, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Joining us for the next several minutes here in studio, fresh off the field after a beautiful day of OTAs. Happy to have Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander in studio. That was a great day out there today, wasn't it?
It was awesome. It was always great to go outside, get off this turf, you know, especially for my legs and knees and joints. It's just so much better to be on grass outside and really enjoying the weather, especially here in Buffalo this time of year.
It looked and felt like training camp a little bit.
No, it's not training camp.
All right. It was sunny. It was warm.
Yeah, well, I guess weather-wise, yeah. There's no pads on. Yeah, the intensity has not stepped up yet.
Now you need to pump the brakes.
Right.
The intensity picked up from the conditioning work you've been doing for a couple
Yeah,
weeks.
Of course, because now you're actually competing versus some guys. You know, you're actually out there running some football plays. So it is fun to be out there. The intensity did step up, but it's nowhere near training camp at
What's
all.
The feel? I mean, what's the vibe? I mean, it's a new locker room,
yeah,
bunch
I
of
like
new guys.
It.
I mean,
I like it. I mean, I like the guys we brought in. I think Sean and Brandon have continued to do a great job of, in their second year, of bringing in men, you know, like Tre'Davious White, like a Micah Hyde, and they brought in the same character guys the second time around. And some veterans and our young guys. I mean, I think Trey has done a great job so far. I'm just looking for him to continue to do well at the mic position. He's really been controlling, I think, the calls well, making checks, and just learning each and every single day. You know, it's only been 3 days, but each day I can see that he's getting more comfortable and confident in what we're calling and where he needs to be.
I was going to ask you that. We were talking about maybe on the show, or maybe I was talking to myself about this. He's got a lot, man, on his plate, doesn't he, Tremaine Edmonds? He's got a lot. They're putting a lot in front of him.
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, he's the Mike. He's the quarterback of the defense. So he's making the calls. He's making the checks. If somebody's out of alignment, eventually he'll grow into where he can correct people. But right now I'm trying to help him as much as I can. Obviously, Matt Milano and guys around him. Kyle Williams, I know, is definitely telling him a lot of things in the run game, what he's seeing as far as line splits. So we're all trying to pour into him as much as we can. And he's soaking it up really well. He's not a guy out there in deer in headlights, because sometimes when you give guys too much information, they slow down, clam up, and they're like, where do I go? But he's done a great job of responding, looks athletic, and then he'll just continue to grow into himself as a player and understanding of the game.
This is one of the things that people don't get is that, yeah, it's okay. You can go in there and do the X's and O's. He can make the call in the huddle. But just like you said, it's endless. Everything else he could do if he knew.
Right.
He could do if he was experienced. He could do if he had been a five-year vet. Because like you said, if he could tap an offensive line or a defensive line to move out 3 inches.
Exactly.
He could tell this guy, hey, back off a little bit. Hey, look for this in this formation. Mm-hmm. Hey, do that. And there's a million things that are beyond just calling the play and running to the right spot.
Exactly. And the crazy thing is that he didn't do any of this in college. He was the wheel linebacker, the backer into the boundary, and he was just a flow, see ball, get ball type player. And for him to make this transition as smoothly as he's making it, I mean, it's really impressive. I mean, I think it talks a lot about his foundation, obviously his brothers being in the league, his dad of playing. He's approaching this game with a lot of maturity and just want to. He wants to be. He wants to be great, and he's accepting that role of Mike linebacker and all that it entails.
Listen, that's the characteristic. You got to want to be great. Not want to win.
Yeah.
Not want to make the team. Not want to sign a big contract. You want to be great.
Right, and that's what
that
he feels.
It's all about football and getting. And then there's no ceiling either. It just keeps getting. There's right. always something to do.
Right.
You don't ever reach a plateau where you think, okay, I've done what I wanted to do. You just don't.
Exactly.
That's a great place to be.
Yep, and he has that, and it's built in him. And then and add that in with his God-given talents, I would be surprised if he's not, you know, an all-pro player in the next, you know, two, three years growing in that direction. I would be surprised, really. I mean, just his athleticism and how well he's handling information, I would be really surprised if he's not that next great linebacker, you know, in his era, like that Luke Kuechly type. I'd be surprised.
How good could this defense be this year?
We already had this conversation. Obviously, I'm gonna say top 10, if not better.
Didn't you say top 5 last week?
We should be top, but that wasn't the answer. It was middle of the range or top 10.
You're right.
Yeah. So that was. Yeah.
I hope you're top 10. I do.
Matt Milano said top 5.
Oh, that's right. Milano said top 5. What? Nothing has happened yet to make this.
I know.
We already talked about this. It's 3 games. You have. Average games in those 3 games are not horrendous games, and you're top 10.
Don't get your guard up, Murph. I'm asking him a question. That's all. All right, now the important stuff.
Right.
Kickoff rules. You and I, nobody knows what it's going to look like.
Right.
But it's going to be different.
It's a lot different.
Yeah. So early returns are, and I've been talking to guys, and all of us kind of have this idea that, man, all of a sudden the lid's kind of come off the return game a little bit because of the standing start.
Mm-hmm.
But they are given 15, there's going to be 8 guys up close
right.
in the alignment. Now, most people, aside from the running start that goes away, it's going to look kind of the same.
Right.
But the techniques are going to be very different.
It's going to be different, I think, mainly just because of the timing, because of that extra 5 yards kind of running head start you get into it. You know, you probably be down the field maybe, I don't know. I don't know what that speed is going to gain you for, maybe
That's
5
just it.
Yards.
Yeah, you don't know.
You don't know yet how the timing is going to work out. So it's definitely, as a guy that covers kicks, it definitely would determine whether or not I'm a button presser guy, which I probably wouldn't do because the guy's going to already have the ball. So I don't necessarily want to engage the returner or the guy that's blocking me unless the ball is right behind
me. Would you call yourself a what guy?
A button pusher?
Button press guy. What button press means if a guy is – the kickoff team or kickoff return team is retreating back to block me. I'm running down. If the ball is within, let's say, 5 yards of him, I'm not going to try to run around him because a great returner is just going to run the opposite way. So I'm going to run right down the middle of him, two-gapping, push him back, decrease the air or the space between him and the blocker and make the returner make a decision. And when he makes a decision, I rip off and then make the play to that side.
Right. See, that's the thing, and that's why this is – so intriguing to me, because that it's that timing that is the catalyst for every great return.
Right.
When the guy's coming up and the returner's got the ball in his hands, if he can go full speed, make a cut off a block just as they engage, because what happens is the coverage guy, like Lorenzo's saying, he's coming down. You take a guy on physically, you're going to pick a side. You're going to either go to his right, to his left, or go right at him. And if you go right at him, you know, if the guys on either side of you pick a side,
right.
The returner, space. The timing is such, and the returners are usually good enough athletes to pick the blank spot. There ain't nobody there. and he'll just put his foot in the ground and he's through that hole at full speed, gone. And that is the crucial element in great returns, is the timing of the front line blockers and the coverage guys. And for the last few years,
right,
it kind of hasn't existed. The guy catches it, takes about three steps out of the end zone, and there's already guys around their blocks. You know, so he's got to avoid a guy trying to get out to the 20. Yeah. Forget about breaking the front line. Right,
yeah. I mean, that's key. We already had this, not as much, it won't be as significant, even when we went from the 30-yard line to the 35. That had to change for kickoff return in the timing. So it's even going to be even more drastic now. And like we were talking earlier, now it's going to, I think, be more of a space game and give the returners a little bit more time to set up blocks and maybe even have some bigger returns, which innately may create a world where kickoff teams or special teams coaches want to kick the ball out of bounds or kick the ball out of the end zone and give it at the 25 versus giving up returns that may come out to the 30-yard line if that's the average.
That's been the big thing lately, because I told you this, Murph, we've been talking about it. For the first time in football history, the last 2 years when they moved the 35 up and they moved the touchback to the 25,
right,
for the first time in history, it was better in a field position on average not to return the football.
Right.
That's the first time it's ever happened. It's been the last 2 years when they moved it out to the 25. Our average starting time for return was like the 23, 24.
Right.
And it just didn't make sense to return the ball. Mm-hmm. So then, conversely, it incentivized teams kicking it to have them return it.
Right.
And now the league's like, well, God, we were trying to get rid of those things, you know, and now we incentivized them to actually return.
So this may be
forced to be returned.
Help the reverse or the flip side of it, hopefully.
Yeah, Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. Let me ask you about the other thing they approved today. Helmet hits will lead. When it first came out back in March, you raised a concern about helmet hits and ejections. It seems like the league's backed off it a little bit, and all the ejections will be subject to a replay review. Does that handle it from your perspective or not really?
No. I mean, what is the letter? What's the ruling actually say? I don't know what the.
I can find
see, for me, even when you review something, it's such split second. So is it like just the Ryan Shazier hits where my helmet is all the way down? Or is it if I hit a guy with my face mask when I'm coming in to make a shoulder tackle? What is it? Because for me, like I keep saying, the only players getting ejected are going to be defensive guys. You're not going to see a running back dipping. He's lowering his target, dipping his shoulder. He's creating that new he's engaging me too, because he is running at me as well. And now I have, as a defender, I either have to lay off, maybe he breaks a tackle, or I get ran over and I look soft and you put stuff on tape.
Here's what happens. You give him your chest, his helmet duck, you give him your chest, all of a sudden you get go back, the back of your head hits the ground, you got the concussion.
Right. You see, so it's a lot of things that, I just don't know. And it's football at the end of the day, and we have to figure out a way. The play is safe, but at the same time, there's no legislation where you're going to just make injuries and concussions zero sum. It's no way you can do it.
The thing that gets me, too, is they've got it worded, and they brought out some video to show guys. And a lot of times, and see what you thought about this, and I'm sure you've seen the video of it, where it's like the second guy in where he's kind of light the guy up. And I get that. Mm-hmm. I mean, coming in the second guy. But you do still have to, like, if the guy's got him held up, and he's trying to fight him against getting a first down, mm-hmm. you've got to come in and have some momentum. How you deliver the momentum, I guess, is the big thing. But you see these guys.
Right. Some of these I get. I mean, that's bad. He's ducking his head, and it's egregious. I understand that. This one is bad, too. He ducks his head.
Yeah, that was a pretty bad one.
These are risky plays.
We're watching these on MSG. Our viewers can see it. But on radio, our audience, they're showing some highlights from the season this past year, and they're being highlighted as ejections. And they when they show them like that in slow motion,
of course,
that,
you're going to be like, wow. It's propaganda.
It ain't easy.
It's not. Because there's going to be some that are gray area that are, okay, hit him with his face mask. He's looking at him, but his helmet hits first, his shoulder helmet. I mean.
You think the catch rule was hard to interpret? Wait till they get a load of this thing.
So I just don't like it. So it's going to be too hard and to eject a guy for, you know, coming in and making a good football play. It's going to be hard for me to swallow.
Yeah. All right, we got a few more minutes with Lorenzo. We'll take a break, come back with that. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We're coming to you from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the big show. John Murphy, Steve Kasker. Lorenzo Alexander's in studio with us for a couple of more minutes here. The lowdown with Lorenzo for a couple more minutes. Lorenzo, it's back. The controversy about pregame policy. The NFL yesterday, the owner is approving a new pregame policy that requires that all team and league personnel on the field should stand and show respect for the flag. And if they choose not to stand, they may stay in the locker room.
Right.
You went through this last year, last October, September, yeah. October. Where are we now? What do you think? What do you think of yesterday's vote?
You know, it really doesn't surprise me at all. I understand why the owners are passing this rule. Obviously, they're business owners, and us protesting impacts their business. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand it because I was a business owner at one time, and you're trying to do things and trying to play both sides and try to get things together. Fortunately, from here, we have ownership that also cares about the community, and they are willing and are eager to put money back in this community as well and initiatives as well. And it's not just a very simple, you know, blanket statement. You know, it's a very complex situation. So I'm looking forward to controlling what I can control. And that's making an impact in this community alongside the Buffalo Bills organization. So we're very eager. We actually have meetings already set up with ownership, the community service department that's going to be pretty much player-driven about how we can make an impact in the inner city of Buffalo, and like we did last year,
yeah,
which was a microcosm of what we want to do. When we impacted maybe, I think, five or six different places where we had players go out. We also have in the works of coming up with some type of initiative, whether it's education, social injustice, whatever that looks like, we don't know yet. That's what the meetings are for. But really just to streamline our impact and effort and our influence into the community to really help create change, and just trying to figure out a way that creates the most impact, you know, because education, for example, normally impacts a lot of different things. Kids going to college, being successful, having a job, having an understanding of how to impact their communities legislative-wise. So that's why I think people tend to go that way, because it impacts so many different things, yeah. Family structure, the more educated you are, I mean, all that stuff. Normally. So that's what we're trying to figure out now. How can we mostly be impactful in this Buffalo community and move forward past just protesting? Because that's one part of it, one piece. I think we did a good job of creating the conversation. Now we need to follow up, work with the people that are in these different institutions of really creating change that people, everyday people, people in these communities can really feel and see and grow from and benefit from.
I mentioned, Steve, you just said it. You guys figured it out last year. And again, from my outside perspective looking in, you figured out a way to take it beyond just a simple pregame protest and,
right,
and do some good.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're ready to do that again.
Yeah, given our time, energy, and money. And obviously, it's player-led right now, but I know Kim and Terry are very eager to adopt this culture and make it what the Buffalo Bills organization does. Definitely from a staff perspective and a player perspective, because players come and go. So, you know, obviously I'm here now, Micah, Jerry, Steve Hoschka, a lot of people that are involved in this, but in a couple of years I'll be gone. So what we're trying to do right now is try to set up a legacy that it goes beyond me and who I am and the Bills, because people are going to flow in and out of this organization over the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, and we want to still have a solid connection to the community and understanding and impact in those areas that really need to be addressed.
And one of the things, too, that you were just mentioning, that the league is going to match the money you guys put in. So up to $250,000,
right,
is going to go into your thing from the players,
mm-hmm,
and then the league will match that.
Right.
And so that's a – so
yeah, it's a $500,000,
yeah,
you know, annually.
Do some good.
To really impact the areas in Buffalo that really need the help. So that's what we're going to be looking to do over these next couple of weeks, of coming up with a divisive plan where we're not just throwing money and sprinkling it all over the place, but really streamlining it so that it makes the most impact in kids' lives and family lives.
Last question I have for you on this topic today. Is there any chance that teams, maybe Bills, maybe not the Bills, could be divided by this, by the way that the owners have set up this stay indoors if you want,
yeah,
come outside?
I mean, I think they are divided on it as it is. I mean, you heard the Jets owner come out saying that he's going to pay the fines for his players. I think at the end of the day, it was a compromise between the owners with this policy, because they didn't want to force guys to stand. So they, okay, well, you can let your guys stay in if the team decides to come out. So they tried to do the best way they could. And at the end of the day, do I agree with it? I don't think I do. But, I mean, it's okay because we can still use our platforms in various ways, like me being on the show right now to talk about it, social media, you know, going out in the community. There's other ways where guys can mobilize and get their voice across and voice heard and really still address a lot of these issues that's going on in our communities every day.
Speaking of doing stuff off the field, your Aces Foundation bowling event is a couple of Saturdays away now, right?
June 9th. Can't wait to get out there. Buffalo Bowling Benefit, .eventbrite.com if you want to register. We still have about 50 tickets or so left. We've had some great people. Dunn Tires really stepped up to be our title sponsor in the event. So thank you to them, Rob and everybody over there, Dunn Tires, for stepping up. And so I'm just eager to get out there, have some fun. We'll have players out there. Harrison Phillips will be there. Josh is coming
out.
What's
the format? I mean, is it a contest?
They have 24 lanes over at Strikers Lane. There will be 6 people on each lane. Then I'll sprinkle some players throughout, and the team that has the highest score will win a prize, and then the highest bowler will win a prize. I had some trophy stuff, some pictures, autograph stuff to hand out to those people. So it's a competition, but at the end of the day, relating, having a great time, raising money for South Park High School and the Bell Center.
That's always the fun part.
Right.
Hey, you survived the long, long, long Buffalo winter with your family.
Yes,
here.
I did.
And now the payoff. You're here for what looks like to be a great Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, we're really enjoying it. Looking forward to it. I have some stuff tomorrow with the American Diabetes Association. We're actually going to have a youth camp out here for about 15 kids on the field. Going over to Spot Coffee to hang out. So if any fans want to come check me out, I'll tweet it out later, the exact location. I'll be over there. And then Sunday, I have a friend, Chris Wilson, played with him in Washington for about 5 years. Him and his family are coming down like brothers. This is what I love about football. Mm-hmm. The relationships that you have, you know all about it, Steve. Get together. We're going to go over to Niagara, hang out, probably do Maid of the Mist. And then my cousin's here locally. He's a chef, so Monday he's going to barbecue, and I'll have some of the fellas over.
Oh, so you're going pro with the barbecue. It's not like you with a chef hat out of the grill.
Yeah, not somebody, me. He's a chef. Yeah, he throws down. Last year he did it for my son's birthday, so this year he's doing Memorial Day for us.
You done Maid of the Mist before?
I've done it. It's pretty cool.
It's really
cool. That's probably the best part about doing it. Going to look at it, you do that one time, okay. Going down in there, it's pretty impressive. You don't realize how strong the winds and the water and getting wet is.
You're chugging up to the base of the falls. And the first time I did it, I was like, well, that's it. They got to turn around now.
Right.
No, chug. Well, they got to turn around. And all of a sudden you look up and there's the Horseshoe Falls falling right on top of it. It's the greatest ride.
Really. Yeah, it's awesome.
I've never done it.
No,
come on,
you haven't,
man.
Really?
I've never done it.
I know a guy that knows a guy that can get you hooked up.
Yeah. See, it's funny because when I was – everybody comes up, like you. Everybody comes up. They got
to
go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Got
to
go.
And either I was working or what. Now that we've been here for 3 decades, now nobody comes up anymore, right? So I never. While I was playing, everybody went, and I was always. So I never had a time to go. And then you know, I said,
well,
we're going Sunday. We're going Sunday. What are you doing Sunday? You can come with us.
I got a member golf tournament.
Lorenzo, have a great weekend.
It's not Maid of the Mist.
have a great weekend.
Great seeing you, Lo.
Yeah, always.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us in studio. More to come. One more hour to go. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Bills will be without second-year wide receiver Zay Jones for the rest of the spring. Head coach Sean McDermott today said that Jones had surgery late last week on his knee. He'll be out for the remainder of the spring workouts. No timetable, according to McDermott, on when he'll be back. He did say that his 2018 season appears not to be in jeopardy, but there's no, as we said, no timetable at all. But Zay Jones injured his knee. No specification on when that occurred. He was coming back also from off-season shoulder surgery for a torn labrum. On the other side, the Bills' head coach announced that wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin is fully healthy and performing well in OTA practices. The final OTA of the week was today in the beautiful sunshine of Orchard Park. Here in Orchard Park today, the Bills will get the weekend off, come back for 3 more organized team activity sessions next week. NFL approved a new policy on pregame ceremonies yesterday at the owners' meetings in Atlanta. The policy requires all team and league personnel to stand if they're on the field. They'll have the option to stay in the locker room during the anthem if they prefer. Elsewhere in sports, the NBA playoffs, the Celtics beat Cleveland last night 96-83. Game 5 of those playoffs, and the Celts now lead the Eastern Conference Finals 3-2. Game 6 in Cleveland tomorrow night, 8:30. Tonight, Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals. with the series in Houston. It's all tied up at 2 wins apiece between Golden State and Houston. Buffalo Bisons in action as we speak. Top of the third inning in downtown Buffalo. The Syracuse Chiefs lead the Bisons by a score of 8-0. The Herd had a 6-game win streak snapped last night by Syracuse by a score of 7-2. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio starting hour number 3. And joined in studio right now by Bills insider Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com. What's that? What are you doing?
Round it up.
Rounding up the week. Really, Chris, thanks for coming in. Final OTA session today.
Sure.
It's beautiful out there today, wasn't it? Unbelievable.
Great day. Great day. You kind of get juiced up, you know, watching football out there on a day today.
We've been trying to get Murph to putt. He keeps saying training camp, it's training camp.
It
and everybody's like,
felt a little bit like training camp.
And Lorenzo's like, no.
Here's why it felt like training camp.
The weather.
There were fans, the weather. It was nice and hot.
And they're playing football.
And they're playing football. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Those are all similarities. Hard to argue that.
What'd you notice?
I liked the tempo for the first week, you know, and I was impressed with the way the rookies matched the tempo that was out there. I mean, any rookie will tell you they know it's going to get stepped up a notch from what they did in rookie minicamp.
Right.
But knowing it and executing it are two different things. And I didn't see many busts out there. I think I only saw about 2 or 3 by rookie players where, you know, we got to redo this play or this guy's off and he's getting a lot of instruction after the play. I thought the rookies, you know, kind of showed well today, all things considered.
One of the things I always think about when you talk about tempos of rookies kind of overdo it. They come out and they're like going 1,000 miles.
There was one instance of that.
They're like 1,000 miles per hour for the rookies and everybody else is going, hey, this is a run through. It's just
– right.
But sometimes that's where they go. But if they did a nice job of saying, you know, keeping that pace up,
right.
That's where they get it right. It's not going fast enough. It's going too fast.
Yeah.
And the veteran's going, whoa, bro, hey.
Yeah. There's a learning curve there. I don't think there's any secret about that. And there'll be another learning curve when they get to camp, first day in pads. You know, we're only doing thud, guys. Nobody to the ground.
Yeah,
and we had somebody get, you know, bumped today. But, you know, it's going to happen. It's not intentional. They'll get it.
Training camp, I'll tell you, I did my first radio jump from the booth at the Pro Bowl this year. I did the radio analysis for that Pro Bowl game. That's what it was. It was a training camp practice. It was a thud drill. Nobody hit the ground.
Yeah.
And wherever the guy ran through the hole and we got stood up in the hole, poop, whistle was dead. They'd
right.
spot it and they'd go again. I was shocked because that's not what I remember, I mean, back in the day.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. I mean, it's a tempo thing. And that's, you know what? If everybody knows the tempo, nobody will get hurt. You know, and that's.
Right.
You know, what. Tell me about some of the – you said the rookies were kind of hanging in there. You only had – who – anybody – I mean, it's –
Well, can we start with a rookie everybody wants to know about?
Yeah.
Josh?
Yeah.
Let's cut to the chase.
Well, exactly. You know, I was moving Kalina people out there. I said, you don't want to watch this punt drill. Come on over here because people are going to ask – no offense. You're going to tell people I was at Bills practice today. They're not going to say, oh, how'd the punt team look?
That's exactly
They're going
right.
to say, how did Josh Allen look? Right?
Yeah, you don't have to apologize to me for that because I was there with you. I was looking there too.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he did pretty well. You know, I was trying to take with a grain of salt the fact that he spent the day going against the threes.
Yeah.
So as a top-flight first-round draft choice, I expect him to make plays against third-team defense, and he did. I thought of the three quarterbacks today – he was the most willing to go down the field with the football. I don't think it was even close. I don't think Nate Peterman threw a pass over 20 yards, and I think A.J. McCarron threw 2 that might have been attempted over 20 yards. Josh Allen had about 8.
Yeah.
So, and that's his M.O.
Yeah.
He's always been known as that kind of quarterback, but to see it this early in the going and to actually be executing those plays is encouraging, even if it is against a third-team defense. I think his best throw of the day was the touchdown pass to Ray McCloud.
Yeah, no.
I mean, he fit that thing between a corner and
a close. We weren't there. We didn't see.
Okay,
we
so he drew. So it, they're about – they're on the plus 30 going in, and he drops, and Ray's lined up wide to the right side, and he makes an in-cut. You know, I'm not going to give you routes and everything. I don't know what the route was specifically because I didn't watch him the whole way.
Slant and go, whatever.
Or like a skinny post, something like that. And, you know, he beats the corner inside, who knows he's got his help inside. And the safety's closing, and Allen just ripped it in there. And, you know, you got a safety pulling up. Is the safety probably making contact in live football and drilling the receiver? Good chance. Mm-hmm. But he drilled it in there, and it was a touchdown, 30-plus yards. It was a nice throw, well-timed, well-executed. I talked to Ray after practice, and because Josh came running all the way down the field, and, you know, a couple of superlatives in there while he said nice route.
R-rated?
You know, yeah. So they were happy that, you know, the play worked out. And then there was another throw late in practice that he was late on, late reading it, but he still got it there before the DB turned his head around. Travaris Cadet came out to the left side on a he split out wide pre-snap and then pretty much just ran a go. And I don't know if the DB – I don't know what the DB was expected, quite frankly. Because the throw was – yeah, like he got caught flat-footed on the turn, and Allen's throw got there even though he was late. So those were two of his better throws. Yeah, another nice one, a couple of nice passes to Robert Foster. One on a well-timed slant, like a over the middle, did a good job, hit him right in stride. He got away from the safety, and it probably would have gone for a touchdown to the far side of the field. And there was another pass to Foster as well. So I think Allen availed himself pretty well today, you know, all things considered. He certainly looks comfortable. I mean, there's no jittery nature to his play at all. He's locked in, and he's going.
The touchdown of McLeod is probably the one that sparked his quote, which I consider his best quote since he's been here. In my opinion, nothing better than throwing a touchdown. Now, Steve found fault with that quote.
I did not. Here's the thing.
Steve said, wait a minute, I got a list of things.
Yeah. When you're doing this, we read a lot of stuff from other teams and AFC East and stuff. Sam Darnold goes out. All they could talk about was the two interceptions he threw against his team. Baker Mayfield threw three interceptions in the first
day. None today.
And so, you know,
for Allen.
Right. So what are you going to read into that? Nothing, right? I mean, it's May and it's early. Thrown against. It's early.
It's early.
But the fact of the matter is – just compare him to, like, how you said he goes down the field more than those guys. I mean, and they said they all took the exact same amount of reps today.
For the most part. At the end of practice, it was interesting because the way it would go is they get four reps each in a 12-play series. And today, Nate was with the first teamers. AJ was with the second teamers. Josh has been running with third team all week. You know, Peterman and McCarron are flip-flopping with the ones every other day. So today was Peterman's day with the ones, and I think we all have seen enough of Peterman's game to know what he is. He's a guy that's going to take the drop, get it out quick.
Anticipates.
But a lot of that stuff is usually in the 5 to 15-yard range. AJ is similar, I think, to a certain degree, but will, at least based on what we saw today, went down the field a couple of times. You know, and as I said, Allen was more apt to wait on a route and go downfield. Now, how realistic is that with a real live pass rush? I don't know. And we're only going on one day's observing. Right. It does depend on that. But I think the interesting thing was at the end of practice, Allen got an extended, the third teamers got an extra two series of work because I think those are the guys they need to know the most about, whether it's defense or offense.
Right.
So I don't think anything should be read into that. People are going to be like, oh, Allen got extra reps at the end of practice. Well, he needs the most work. He's the rookie.
And the guys he's with.
And the case is much the same for everybody he's lining up with on both sides of the ball. So it's good that they got him extra time because extra work never hurts for a guy who's got to learn on the job.
Right. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com in studio with us. There were questions. We heard Josh Allen's news conference. There were questions about the depth chart and being with the third team. Clearly, we're much too early to put any stock into where they're lining up. But at some point, they're going to, I would think, integrate Josh Allen up with the ones and or twos.
Yeah, provided he's making the progress that they expect of him.
Is that camp or is that even before camp this spring?
I think it depends on how quick he comes along. I don't think there's any question that Josh has a pretty solid football IQ. He's passionate about knowing the game from an X's and O's standpoint. Is always ready to consume more. I mean, he has an insatiable appetite for, you know, the schemes, you know, of the game at the pro level. So, you know, I think the want to is there, the willingness is there. Can he translate it to the field on a consistent basis? You know, really today, I think back to what I saw in January at the Senior Bowl, and then I watch in practice today, and it is already in stark contrast.
Yeah, you didn't like him at the Senior Bowl.
No, because he was clearly uncomfortable,
yeah.
Jittery, feet were all over the place, and the ball, as a result, was also. Today, he had two inaccurate passes. Two out of probably, I want to say, 35 to 45 wow. dropbacks today.
Wow.
So that's pretty good. And again, we're not real football yet.
Pump the brakes.
But they weren't at the Senior Bowl either.
Tell him to pump the brakes.
They weren't at the
you
Senior Bowl.
You pump the brakes.
Either. I'm just saying what I saw. That's
I'm ready to jump in. What about everybody else? I mean, let's talk about the other side of the football. You've got Tremaine Edmonds in the middle of it. We talked to Lorenzo Alexander. He said the kid's doing great. I mean, he's digesting it all. He's got a lot on his plate. And we mentioned that there's a ton of stuff he doesn't
Lorenzo
know.
Lorenzo said 2 to 3 years, he figures Tremaine Edmonds is all pro.
First team all pro. Yeah, he thinks he's got that kind of ability. And you know what, though? I mean, yeah. That
now, somebody's got to pump Lorenzo's brakes on that.
Athletic ability doesn't get you all pro. But having a lot of responsibility and handling it well does. And that's what it seems to be in the early returns for Tremaine Edmonds.
Right. And, you know, you heard Bill Parcells for how many years talk about the importance of having smart football players.
Right.
You know, I still remember that press conference in 97. I think he's coaching the Jets. And, you know, he said, I am so tired of dumb plays being made. And so the reporter asks him, well, why are dumb plays being made? He said, because you got dumb guys playing.
Yeah.
And there's a value in having smart players.
Players always get better.
That's what Tremaine Edmonds is. And I know I've talked about it on the show with you guys previously, but Edmonds is a guy who was studying film at age 15 with his dad, who was his high school coach.
Right.
And, oh, by the way, his dad is a Pro Bowl tight end who can teach him the intricacies of what to look for on a film to dissect things and give yourself an advantage out there. This kid's been doing it. He's 20 years old. He's been doing it for 5 years already.
Yeah.
I mean, he's wise beyond his football years. And if he wasn't, he wouldn't be dropped in the middle of this defense day one to run the huddle
right.
and make pre-snap calls. That's what he's doing now. So, yeah, Lorenzo Alexander, 2 or 3 years. I mean, he stays on this current trajectory. Things are looking good.
They put an awful lot on his plate. I'm not saying he can't handle it, but he's got an awful lot on his plate.
He does. He does. But, I, you know, this is a guy who skipped a grade in school. No problem. A-minus student. You know, I mean, comes from a solid family. I mean, his brothers all did the same thing. I mean, they're all – he comes from good stock. I think that's not the only thing that enhances your odds. You have to have a work ethic to go with it. But I think he's got extraordinary athletic ability. He's got football smarts. He's got good pedigree. I mean, it all should add up to success on the field.
And interestingly enough, too, he's not in a vacuum. Kyle Williams is ahead of him. Starlo Tulele is ahead of him. He's got Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde behind him, quarterback right. in the secondary. So he's got some guys in the middle of that defense that can take some of that off of his plate and make sure and bring him along faster. Now, there's certain things, and we spoke to Lorenzo Alexander about this, and we said, you know, there's a million things you can do better, like showing guys and alerting guys to stuff. But for right now, there's none of that to be done when you're going against third teams.
They're installing base now anyway.
So he's not going to be alone out there, and certainly he's going to be have some guys, and the culture they're trying to build here, they should all be helping each other get better anyway. So that's a plus, I think, for him. When he's sitting in the middle of the defense.
And I was impressed with the confidence this coaching staff has shown in the draft class as a whole, because I think everybody knew Tremaine Edmonds was going to get dropped into the starting middle linebacker role here in OTAs. That was no surprise to anybody. Taron Johnson, their fourth-round pick, is the starting nickel in the slot. Harrison Phillips, with star Latulele absent today, was running first-team defensive tackle next to Kyle Williams. And then, you know, you've got Josh Allen working with the threes but getting a healthy dose of reps and running with the threes with him and getting the bulk of the playing time there were Austin Prohl and Ray-Ray McLeod. Surin Neal was one of the only guys whose reps were somewhat limited, and he's a guy who's making a transition right now. After playing corner last year at Jacksonville State, he's back now at safety and learning some stuff there. But it's a lot like what we saw last year, though, Murph. I mean, with the 2017 draft class getting thrown on the field in rather prominent roles early,
yeah.
they're doing it again here right at the outset of OTAs.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, in studio with us for about another 8 to 10 minutes. If you have any comments or questions, you're welcome to join us, 803-0550, or from outside Buffalo, toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. Aside from rookies, anybody else jump out at you? Not just today, but I guess today was your first day watching OTAs.
Yeah, I mean, I can comb through my notes here really quick, but in terms of some guys that made some plays.
Can I tell you who impressed me?
Go ahead.
Kelvin Benjamin.
You
liked
him?
Good. Looks good. And I like it. You know, you talk about smart players. I like the way he understands where to be on a regular basis, it seems.
I'll give you that. I mean, he didn't make a lot of plays in the passing game today. I'm just happy that he's running and looking healthy.
That's what I mean. He looks healthy. He's thin. He's a different body type than he was last fall.
He essentially played on one leg for the last half of the season last year. I mean, he had a torn lateral meniscus, and, I mean, he just dragged his body out there every week to play, which is a credit to him. And, you know, he has a knee history that, you know, might give pause to some people. But all signs, the arrow's pointing up right now on Benjamin's health. And hopefully that translates into playmaking ability that is going to work for this offense because they need it at that position. So hopefully that continues on its current path. I'm trying to look, and I don't think anybody, like, dominated the practice. You know, Jordan Poyer had a great play off a tip pass over the middle, made an interception. That was the only one of the day.
Threw the pass?
Well, it was Peterman and tipped off Nick O'Leary's hands. I mean, it's
we've seen that before.
Catchable ball. Catchable ball.
That's how it went south in L.A. when it tipped off
DeMarco's
hands and went to the other hand.
It's a catchable ball.
There you go.
I thought Robert Foster did some nice things today, the undrafted kid. And what's interesting is the knock on him is doesn't have natural football instincts, has all the athletic ability for days.
Fast. He's really fast.
All the athletic ability for days, but just doesn't have the instincts, finding the hole in a zone, those kinds of things. You give him a route to run, and it's against man coverage, he's pretty good. So it's going to be interesting to see how he comes along as more and more gets installed. Does his head start swimming a little bit? Or, you know, is he going to be okay? I think the one inherent advantage that he has is he probably has a good working knowledge of a lot of Coach Daboll's terminology just by virtue of the fact that he played in some form of Coach Daboll's offense at Alabama last year.
Talking about receivers, we have to talk about Zay Jones. That really is the downer of the day, I guess. And I don't really have a sense on how serious this could be, or, you know, no timetable provided on when he might be back.
Yeah, no timetable, and, you know, far be it from us to really speculate on what the nature of the injury is. Coach clearly didn't want to get into it, so I'm not going to either. It's tough, man. The guy had a torn labrum that he played half the season with last year. He's already rehabbing from that through the early stages of this offseason. Then this, what Coach described as an ongoing knee issue, kept cropping up, and they said, well, let's take care of it now so you have a chance to play in the fall. But I think we all would agree that he needed reps.
Yeah.
Through the course of this offseason.
He's a new offense. I mean, he's his second new offense in 2 years.
Yeah, and two new quarterbacks throwing the football out there. And now that's all off the table for him, likely until he walks into training camp. Now, you know, if he's getting the lion's share of the reps and, you know, he can go six full weeks, get through three or four preseason games and get all that time in, he should be ready. But it doesn't sound like that's a certainty right now because we really don't know how long it's going to take for him to get all the way back where he's medically cleared and then cleared for football. So it's disappointing, to say the least, especially at a position where there already is a lot of unproven talent. I mean, you have Kelvin Benjamin, Jeremy Curley, and then after that, there isn't a proven guy in the lot at the NFL level. So I think people were expecting Zay to take that year one to year two step. And I think that's a harder step to make when you're going to miss the balance of the spring.
Yeah, and I agree. And I was talking to Murphy. This timing kind of speaks to an injury like for his knee that he got surgery on late last week. It speaks to me like they tried to rehab out of it. and then it didn't work, or wasn't going as well as they wanted to, and they wanted to make sure that he was ready, so they probably sent him in there. And the first thing obviously was asked was if they thought it threatened his season, and he said no, he didn't.
But here's what concerns me. And Steve, you and I were in agreement on this. We did a piece on the website a couple of weeks ago, different items, roundtable topics. Player who has the best chance to make a leap in 2018. We both picked Zay Jones, and I wrote the Bills expected more last year, and they need more this year. And I think, you know, yes, he had the shoulder issue. Didn't know anything about the knee at the time. He's only 23 years old. But I feel like, and nobody has ever verbalized this, but I feel like, Chris, they needed him to be the number two guy. And maybe he still can be that guy. But now there's some doubt about that based on this injury. They needed him
plus
to
he's gonna
jump
in,
up and be number
gonna
two.
He's going to be behind.
Yeah.
He's going to miss all this time. He's going to miss all these OTAs. He's going to miss mini camp. Who knows whether he's going to be back for training camp or the start of training camp. That's valuable for him to be a part of everything while they're installing all this, so he knows where it comes from and he won't be behind mentally.
Yeah, and that's why you wonder if they're going to have to change their approach with him, because I know a lot of what Coach Trubisky and Coach Daboll like to do is teach the concept and let them understand that so you can line them up anywhere. Because if you – and Steve can speak to this better than I can, but – you know, if they know the concept of the play, not just the specific route they're running, you can line them up anywhere. And Zay struggled with that last year when he got lined up in all different places. They may have been better served just putting him in one spot, and he may have been able to contribute more last year. I think the hope was they could teach him more effectively this way by teaching the concept, which is what they're trying to teach these guys now. But with this lost time, it makes you wonder, maybe they say, with all the lost time he had, let's just give him Z and let him go.
Yeah, that, and they could do that. And here's the thing. And a lot of people say, well, you got to expect the guy to be professional. If they're learning, teaching the concept, you got to do it the way. But here's the thing, too. The coaches are trying to win games, so they're going to give him what he can handle. And that means putting him in the X and leaving him there. They'll do that up to a point, but they're always looking for somebody who can do it the way they want it done. Line up anywhere and do it. So Zay Jones may do that, but it's going to turn into a 2.5-3 year career before they can find somebody who can learn the concept and execute it that way. And that's, but until then, you got to give the kid what he can handle and
get
him on the field so he can contribute in the best way he can.
That's why I'm wondering if the approach is going to have to change due to all this time he's going to miss on the field. I mean, he'll be in the classroom with them, but it's not the same as repping it.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Hey, Chris, want to get you involved in our Twitter poll before we let you go, because the theme of today's show, unofficially, Steve, I think has been pump the brakes, right? We've said it. Because we were all excited. Steve was...
I wish there was an over-under before I came on.
Steve was chugging Bill's Kool-Aid earlier this week, and based on a couple of things that have happened this week, I think it's time to pump the brakes. Wait, we got several months now before the season begins. Our Twitter poll, Chris, deals with this kind of a little bit. On Twitter, we're asking listeners, what's the biggest objective for the Bills offseason and why? We're about halfway through the offseason from Super Bowl to first preseason game. Our Twitter followers voting in, 44% say the biggest thing they've got to do now is install the new offense. 28% say they've got to find, they've got to settle on the quarterback depth chart. Who's at the top of the quarterback depth chart? 27% say they've got to find top three receivers, and Zay Jones' situation plays into that. What do you think? What's the biggest objective for the second half of the Bills offseason? And why?
It's the quarterback, because number two will help you with number one.
Yeah.
I think, and that's why I asked Coach McDermott that question today. I said, you know, how is your plan going to play out here in terms of handling the dual task of effectively installing a new offense and undertaking a three-man quarterback competition? That's a lot of rope to pull on in one offseason.
That's a lot to sort through.
Yeah. So I was hoping to get some kind of answer from him on that. He asked me to be more specific.
Yes.
I tried, but his answer basically was, don't expect the offense to be where the defense is. And I think that's an answer we can chew on, at least, from Coach. And he's right, because for the most part, this offense is going to be behind
it's
the defense
be working, it's
for a
be
long
progress, yeah.
time. We may not see the offense turn the corner until they decide who the quarterback is. It may take that long. So now the question becomes, when's the drop-dead date? When do Brian Daboll and Coach McDermott say to themselves, we got to know by this time if we want to be ready for week one and have our quarterback in place? and have all the ducks in a row.
Here's how it's going to work. I mean, they're going to know early, but they're not going to tell anybody until week one.
Well, that's how observe.
Work. Really?
You might, yeah. Remember, that's how they'll do it.
They're
going to
keep balancing the reps out, practice field?
We'll see.
You'll be able to tell.
We'll see.
I mean, Murph and I have seen it before. There have been three-man competitions here before. One just 3 years ago.
And they were all settled well before the season opened.
Yeah, by about the second preseason
When did they
game.
Announce it was going to be then, though?
August 30th was when they announced Tyrod as the starter. Right. I remember that.
Right.
But it was going in that direction.
After the preseason.
We knew that. No, it was,
with respect to your Twitter poll, you've got to know where you're going at quarterback if you want to effectively install your offense, at least in my opinion. So one caters to the other in large part.
Right, yeah. The what you can do offensively depends on the guy pulling the trigger, no question about it, and they got to know that. And it'll be interesting to see what all three of these guys offer individually. It's going to be fun to watch.
Chris, thanks. Have a great holiday weekend. We'll get you back.
You too, guys.
Yeah, hey, thank you. Man.
Yeah, we've got some good stuff coming up on the website this afternoon. So we'll have quarterbacks weighing in on how they felt week one of OTAs went for each of them personally. So that'll be up in the afternoon. We'll also get the usual four or five things we learned from week one of OTAs. And then we got an interesting feature tomorrow for people to chew on over the weekend on Ryan Groy, who's probably got his best opportunity in the now entering his fourth year in a Bills uniform to finally nail down a starting job. We'll see
center?
How it goes. Well, he was sprinkled in at guard today, but I think center is where he's going to battle primarily with Russell Bodine. Much like the quarterbacks are rotating with the ones, those two guys are every other day also at center.
Okay. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. We thank you. Steve and I back with more. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. This show has just moved along today. We're down to the final half hour of the show. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio for One Bills Live from One Bills Drive over in New Era Field. Folks from Collider over there having lunch, looking at the names on the Wall of Fame, the Steve Tasker name, the Thurman Thomas name. Steve Tasker's in studio with us here now. Hey, Sean McDermott spoke earlier today. We were talking about that. One thing he was asked about was attendance at these off-season workouts so far. And as I said, they've got 2 weeks left of OTAs, 1 week left of mandatory minicamp. The attendance is supposed to be 100% there. But, boy, every time we look out there, Steve, it seems like there's an awful lot of players here. McDermott was asked about it today. How's the attendance been so far in the OTAs? Here's what the head coach had to say.
Yeah, we've been right around full participation, which is phenomenal. This time of year, and I can't say enough about how much of a team effort that is from everyone around the building and the players in order to get here and stay here and put in the work. These guys are as focused of a group as I have seen this time of year and as hard of a working group of guys as I've been around to this point in my career.
That's good, Steve, right? I mean, there's no way of testing that, but it looks like a full group.
Yeah, they've got plenty of bodies out there. There's no question about it. You see, whenever they do team and stuff like that, there's plenty of guys standing around watching. And plus, they've got enough guys now that even while they're doing some teamwork, they'll have position groups off doing specialized work off the side. So, it's voluntary, no question about it. But they've got a lot of guys that are volunteering to be here, work really hard at it. So it's a good thing. It speaks to the culture they're trying to build. And I'm with him. There's still a lot of work to be done, but it's certainly easy to do all that work when you got enough guys to go around.
Not here, of course, Richie Incognito, who was released from the reserve retired list earlier this week and then had that little incident in Florida. No updates on that. He was taken into custody by authorities in Florida today and is under observation. And McDermott didn't have much to say about that, but he was asked about it today. He was asked about the decision to take Richie Incognito off the reserve retired list.
Well, you know, as you look at it, first of all, I want to wish Richie well as he moves forward. Certainly appreciate all he did for this organization. And then as I was here last year, just 1 year of his career with the Buffalo Bills and what he meant to us and what he meant to me. You know, Richie informed us several weeks ago that he wanted to retire and then following that a couple of weeks later, give or take on a time frame there, he wanted to unretire. So we granted him the request, and we're moving on. So other than that, really, Jay, at this point, that's a question probably for Richie and his camp.
Well, we talked about it the other day, yesterday. I hope Richie's well, and I hope he's okay. It's just it's troubling, but I think it's pretty clear there's no wellspring of, like, ill will towards Richie Incognito here.
No, not at all. I don't think so either. And plus, the simple fact of the matter is a month or two ago, Richie decided he was going to retire, and he cited at that time, he said he was having some health issues with his liver and his kidneys, and the stress was killing him. And when you get a player talking like that, the team is very cognizant of it, said, okay, and they get it, and they allow him to retire, and then they move on. You know, they draft a guy. They start signing guys. They move on knowing they've got a spot to fill on their roster. And then when you come back and say, hey, I don't know if I really want to or whatever, it's like, you know, take it from a guy who retired. This game rolls on, man. Yeah. They don't wait for anybody.
Yeah.
They're not going to wait till you make up your mind, whether you're a Pro Bowl guard or not. They've got to make decisions based on who they know they've got. And you know, got to this point, and they said, you know, they certainly don't have a problem. He wants to play someplace, let him play. And they granted him his release. And then you know, he's run into trouble almost immediately. So it's a sad thing. I don't think there's any ill will with him. Certainly not in the locker room, and I don't think from the organization either.
Bills came off the field about 90 minutes ago from the third and final organized team activity workout this week. Steve Tasker ran out there, and you talked to a couple of players, right?
Yeah, caught them just off the field in the fieldhouse. They were headed towards the locker room, and we got a chance to talk to Tre'Davious White and Jordan Poyer.
Well, let's listen in. Steve talks with safety Jordan Poyer coming off the field just a little while ago here at One Bills Drive.
Jordan, first of all, let me congratulate you. You got married this offseason. That's a big step for everybody that happens to. How's it going so far?
It's awesome. It's amazing. You know, my wife, she's in Florida right now with my daughter, Aaliyah. So, don't get to see her as much as I would like right now, but, you know, got work to do. But shout out Rachel, hello. I know you'd probably be watching, but no, it's amazing, man. You know, she's my best friend. You know, she's my biggest supporter, and so it's definitely a blessing.
So let me ask you: you married your best friend, but your other best friend, the guy that you share the safety spot with, you and Micah Hyde. Talk about your relationship. Both you guys were new to the team last year, and hard to imagine it going better for your secondary than it did you guys' first year together.
Yeah, I mean, just our relationship off the field, man. You know, he's soon to be a husband here in July. So, you know, our wives are really close with each other. They talk all the time, and we hang out off the field, watch games together, you know, watch film together, and it carries over on the football field. You know, he's a really talented football player, and, you know, we have high expectations on ourselves. And so when you get a guy like that that works, you know, extremely hard like he does, it only motivates you to work just as hard. And so, you know, this defense, these coaches, they put us in the right position to be able to make plays. And so, you know, it's definitely been fun. And so we want to continue to just, you know, get better and keep working.
Talk a little bit about what the next step is for your secondary. You turned out turnovers at almost an alarming rate early in the season last year. Really set this team up. You were kind of the engine that ran it. What's the next step? What other level could this secondary get to?
You know, we think the sky's the limit. We have high expectations on ourselves as a secondary, and coming back in the system for a second year, you know, it makes it even. I don't want to say easier, but it's a lot. You know, things on the field now, OTAs are happening a lot faster. You're reacting, you know, a lot better. You're seeing your keys a lot better, and so being in the second year in the system, you know, with Trey outside and Vontae, a veteran leader coming in, you know, like I said, it's the sky's the limit for us.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that. You had EJ last year. Tre'Davious came in and made a big splash as a corner in the league, which is it's not easy to do. And yet now you've got Vontae on the other side. What's Vontae bring to that mix? Because it's going to be, you know, a new chemistry potion back there.
No, he's bought in. You know, he sees the way that that we go about our business, and he's bought in every sort of way. You know, he's a leader. You know, naturally, and he's a two-time Pro Bowler, so you got to respect that. And, you know, he's a playmaker, and so when you get a guy like that comes in, that only adds more strength to your secondary. You know, like I said, the sky's the limit for us, man. We have really high expectations on ourselves, and we just want to keep working.
You know, one of the things that outside people looking in at your room saying, listen, the only change, really, one of the big changes is John Butler. You've got a new defensive back coach. Talk a little bit about your relationship, what you know about John Butler, what he brings to the table, and how much of a plus or minus it is getting your position coach changed in the offseason.
No, he's a great addition to this team, and I can see why the coaching staff hired him. You know, he understands his X's and O's really well, and you know, he just loves to talk football. His energy is always high. You know, we always say him and Bobby Babich, our safety coach, they could probably be brothers just because their energy is always so high. They're always amped up, ready to go, always wanting to coach, wanting to make you a better football player. And so, you know, he's a great addition to this team, to our secondary, and so we're very excited to have him.
So one of the big things that happened to the Buffalo Bills last season was signing you, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, two brand-new safeties, or not new to the NFL, but new to the team, and you came in, you clicked right away. And having seen that success, why aren't more teams in the league? What's your take on why it hasn't happened around the league? What made your combination with Micah so special, and why has it worked here when other teams aren't willing to take that risk in this offseason by not signing any safeties?
Yeah, I think Micah and I think at our position, communication is huge. And I think, like I said, that relationship on and off the field, it plays in a factor in the game. And so, you know, I couldn't really say – you know, why guys are getting signed or why aren't guys getting signed for that fact, you know, paying a big amount of money or whatever. But, you know, in our perspective, and Mike and I, communication is huge. And if you're able to get guys lined up and able to talk throughout the down, talk, you know, pre-snap, post-snap, no, pre-snap, during snap, and then, you know, maybe talk about it on the sideline, you know, after a series or whatever, I think that's huge. And I think that goes a long way. And, I don't really know, you know, about the safety market right now, but it's, you know, I just think I know in our secondary with our safeties, that's a huge deal.
Jordan, thanks for taking a minute with us here. Yeah, appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, too.
It hits me again how fortunate the Bills are and how smart they were to get those two, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, together and put them back there. They had great seasons, and they're good quality people, two good leaders. And then you mix in a guy, Vontae Davis, who was talking about, and the rookie last year, Tre'Davious White. I mean, it's a good mix back there.
And when they signed Micah Hyde, it was like on the night free agency began. He was like their top free agent prospect. He was their top guy they wanted to get. They signed him. He came here, and everybody was like, you got a safety? I mean, wasn't really the sexy pick, you know, like we didn't get a running back or a wide receiver quarterback. And then they signed Jordan Poyer as well, so it was obvious they were going to revamp that secondary from the get-go. And then stepped up to the plate and drafted Tre'Davious White in the first round. So it was all new starters in the secondary a year ago. That late training camp trade for E.J. Gaines, he came in and was a huge success here. And I think that was one of the most surprising transformations. If you'd have said at this time last year that was going to be a big difference in the Bills. And for my money, that secondary and their ability to generate turnovers in the passing game was really the engine that started the Bills off on their run and got them to the playoffs.
So you talked to Tre'Davious too.
We had a chance to talk to him, and he came off the field and, you know, first-round draft pick last year. It's hard to imagine him getting off to a better start in his career. And I asked him about that when I caught up with him after practice.
Trey, how big a difference did it make coming in the same group, same defense now for the second year in a row?
It's good. It's good to be in a system where you're comfortable, and you know the sort of the way that the guys move in the back end and the front end. So I'm very comfortable now, and knowing the things that I'm supposed to do. So I know, you know, what the coaches expect, and I know, you know, as far as the players go, I know everything that's going on. So it just helped me play a lot faster, and the game slowed down tremendously.
You made a big splash last year. You came in and you played as good as any corner in the league. And he's kind of got some recognition. You got left off a top 100 player list. Do you think about that? Because a lot of people I was surprised at it.
Absolutely. I'm a competitor, and I feel like, you know, my game film and the way that we perform as a team, also in the transformation that we made as a back end in total, I feel like, you know, my plays should be recognized across the league. But just me knowing that, you know, me being a rookie, you know, you don't get as much recognition. You know, you get it's sort of the body of work. So the vets can pretty much, you know, sort of notice you. But I feel like I played better than, you know, most corners in the league and most corners on that list. But, you know, who knows? I'm just going to do what I'm supposed to do and just control what I can control. But come next year, I'm going to be high on that list.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You came in and you played so well in your first year. It was a surprise for everybody except you probably. But now what do you do? I mean, now you how can you top that?
I just try to take my game to the next level.
What is the next level? What's it look like?
You know, first team All-Pro. first team all pro, Pro Bowl, and going past the first round of the playoffs. That's all I'm focusing on. And if I continue to do that and just go to work every day and work hard and just continue to try to find ways to get better each and every day, I feel like I'll be fine.
Yeah, last year you came in, EJ Gaines came in late in the training camp, was a big addition. And then now you've got Vontae Davis, a name a lot of people know and have heard about and talked to us about his addition to the secondary, because you guys were maybe the strength of the defense last year.
Most definitely, and that's another big – that's a big addition. A two-time Pro Bowler, all-pro corner, you know, 10 years in. So I was so happy we signed him because, you know, it's an opportunity for me to pick his brain and just learn from him from over the years of him, how he played at a high level for so long. So it's definitely a plus for me to have a guy like that on the other side with that much ability and that much experience, because it's just going to make this secondary so much better.
So last year it came out that it was such a great vibe coming out, this really together group. And now it kind of, you got to start from scratch almost. You know, tell us about the five and how important these days are and what you're finding out about the 2018 Buffalo Bills that's different than the 2017.
Sort of the same, you know, with the new guys coming in. You know, it's good that we have great attendance here with the guys that's been on this team. Everybody's coming in with a great attitude, but, you know, they're getting around and they're seeing the way that, you know, how we laid the foundation last year and how, you know, Coach McDermott liked things to go. And we've been doing a great job of showing up and showing those guys the way, the Bills way. And I feel like, you know, they're going to get behind us and we're going to keep this train rolling.
Trey, have a great weekend. Thanks for taking a minute with us.
Travis White with Steve Tasker. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. We're coming to you from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. Learn from today's show, presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Ben Volin on from the Boston Globe, who covered the owners' meetings in Atlanta, Georgia over the last few days. Obviously, the vote on the pregame ceremonies was paramount in the news that came out of the owners' meetings yesterday. And we asked Ben Volin why owners felt that it was important they go back and address the pregame policy after it seemed to have died down last season. Here's his answer.
They felt like they had to address it for this season, and they kind of tabled it in March at the owners' meetings, and this is the last time they're all together before the season starts. So this was the time to do it. Why they chose to reverse course, I'm not really sure, and I agree with you. It was really contained to, you know, a few players in Oakland and a few players in Seattle and maybe five or six guys total. And then it eventually died down, and I agree. I think it really would have been a non-issue. Just a few players in a couple select cities would have been doing it, and they would have been able to move on.
Ben Volin of the Boston Globe. We also had Lorenzo Alexander on the show with us in the studio. Lorenzo talked about the rules changes, including the one on ejections for helmet hits, subject to replay review. Here's what Lorenzo Alexander said.
For me, even when you review something, it's such split second. So is it like just the Ryan Shazier hits when my helmet is all the way down? Or is it if I hit a guy with my face mask when I'm coming in to make a shoulder tackle? What is it? Because for me, like I keep saying, the only players getting ejected are going to be defensive guys. You're not going to see a running back dipping. He's lowering his target, dipping his shoulder. He's creating that new pad level target, and he's engaging me too, because he is running at me as well. And now I have, as a defender, I either have to lay off, maybe he breaks a tackle, or I get ran over and I look soft.
I think he's right. It is going to be a new rule that just goes against defensive players, right? It's hard to imagine that being going against somebody.
90% of the rule changes have to do with defenses and limiting their ability to stop the offense because people want to see scoring.
Yeah, and is that fair? I don't know. I like the way they backed off a little bit. When the rule was first talked about in March, it looked pretty, you know, hard and fast. We will eject players who use their helmets and hit with a helmet. I don't think they're at that point now, and I don't think they're going to be there, Steve.
Yeah, I agree. There might be a couple of ejections, and we made jokes about, in the preseason there's going to be a ton of them, and then they'll let off. I don't know if that'll be the case, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It'll be one of the things now, because people will be looking for it. I mean, fans will want the other team's best player when he makes a tackle to get ejected because it helps them win.
Hey, our poll today, Twitter poll today dealt with the Bills at the end of the first week of OTAs. What's the biggest objective for the Bills offseason program? 44% of you say installing a new offense. 28% of you said finding an early leader at the quarterback position. 26% of you say finding the top three receivers. 2% had something else to say. Chris Brown made a really good point. You got to find a quarterback, and then you can kind of fully install the offense. I agree with
well,
that.
Well, you got to install that offense because once you get your quarterback, you can tailor it. But you got to have everybody on the same page on offense. And no question, there's a lot to do on that side of the football, and that's why the Twitter poll was focused there.
We got a couple of days off. We will not be here tomorrow nor on Monday. We're back on Tuesday. Production assistance from George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, and James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. Steve, have a great weekend.
Ah, you too, Murph. I will.
All you people do as well. We'll see you Tuesday with One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.